The Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle Show contains explicit language and is intended for mature audiences only. But just because you're mature doesn't mean you can't be a little naughty.
It is April 4th, 2023, about 48 hours after WrestleMania 39 was officially put in the books, about 24 hours after the Raw after WrestleMania. And my God, if you check out social media right now, there is a lot of whining and complaining. We'll talk about it. I am Don Tony. Welcome to the Don Tony and Kevin Castle Show, the WrestleMania edition. Join along with me, as always, is...
Kev Castle. What's up, Anthony?
You know, force of habit. I said, as always. See?
I know, yeah, it seems like, I know,
old habits are hard to break.
I just had a flashback.
Hey, Kev, you know, listen. Yeah. I know Raw last night was not that great. The beginning was great. The end was great. Everything in the middle was kind of subpar. But, yeah. You know, I look back at other Raws after WrestleManias. We had one where Randy Orton and Sheamus were wrestling, and the crowd started doing the wave. They started chanting RVD, Michael Cole, JBL, that infamous night with the ball and everything. Then you had the night where John Cena lost to The Rock at WrestleMania. That Raw was horrendous. Yeah. And at the very end of Raw, I lost. I admit I lost. I would like to say The Rock is the better man. I'd like The Rock to come out. Please, the better man won. I would like to acknowledge him. Brock Lesnar's music hits. Brock Lesnar makes his return, beats the balls out of John Cena. And that's all we remember from that Raw after WrestleMania. You know, with all due respect for people on social media calling for Vince's head, they just... worked out a $21 billion deal with Endeavor. Nobody's complaining that Endeavor wants this. And you, some of you spoiled, petulant childs need to stop it. You just had WrestleMania Saturday. Incredible fucking matches. Rhea, Charlotte, Flair, the Usos, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Seth Rollins, Logan Paul. You had an incredible WrestleMania 39 Night 2. We had Gunther, Sheamus, Drew McIntyre. Holy shit. Edge, Finn Balor, Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes. And not even 24 hours later, they are whining and complaining about a subpar Raw. Fire Vince, fire that. You spoiled, petulant little childs. Enjoy the fact that we had some awesome WrestleMania this weekend. The Raw after, hey, write it off. No big fucking deal. But yet people are whining in droves, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I expected the backlash, no pun intended, but I didn't expect to see even people who I normally would say, and I'm not throwing anybody on the bus, not even trying to be cryptic, but seeing some people I thought were pretty rational, reasonable people just flipping out and I went to some pages just to see some takes on it from people I respect, and it was like, uh-oh, they're infected too. It was almost like a virus was going around DT. I'm like, he's infected. He's infected. He looks like he's not infected. He's all right right now. But this guy, this guy's totally infected. And it was, I was really surprised. I mean, listen, the sale of WWE is surreal to me, too. Like, I have to even get acclimated to the fact that, well, the McMahons don't fully own the WWE anymore. They really sold the company. This happened. This wasn't a several-year process. It went through, and it went through on WrestleMania weekend. It's crazy. Yeah. You know, what this will lead to, who knows? But it's not the downfall of the Roman Empire. No, again, no pun intended. I talked about it with Mish earlier today about just because it was breaking news, and I don't see why anybody's getting unhinged yet. Nothing has been said. People thought Triple H coming out there was a cryptic goodbye, that he's going to be gone soon. I didn't see any of this. I mean, I'm not seeing this. You and me are pretty astute wrestling fans. You know, did a little show here for about 20 years. I don't see it. What am I not seeing? What are you not seeing that everyone else is seeing? And it's supposed to be right in front of our face.
Absolute hatred for Vince McMahon. Yeah. And you know what? I will give Lance Storm a lot of credit, because he said something today that really sums it up. You know, Vince McMahon did not step down last year for vacation. There was some very serious accusations, allegations, and a few that he settled out of court, repaid legal fees. You know, at the end of the day, you know, there's no crimes. Let's remember that. But Vince McMahon, he is evil to a lot of people. He is the wrestling version of Donald Trump. And the idea that Endeavor would put this guy back in that type of power, it just triggers the masses. The sad thing for a lot of these people is they think they're creating a movement. They think they're making this worldwide petition. They think they're doing like this yes movement that's going to remove Vince from power. This is Endeavor. This is UFC. This is Dana White. This is, and I don't like Dana White at all. You look at the company that they're around. Get used to it. Because most of those people within those companies, they're just going to send you ambulance. Stop whining. To quote Arnold Schwarzenegger, stop whining. Stop whining. Jeez. Stop whining. Oh, my God. We just had WrestleMania 39, and I thought it was tremendous. It had its ups and its downs. It had some issues. You know, there's a few things that we didn't particularly like, and we'll talk about that now. But I want to say something right off the bat. Kev and I, when we did predictions last week, we agreed on almost every match and the outcome, and we got most of them right. I think the only ones that we really got wrong were Gunther retaining. And, you know, we were kind of split about Dominic and Ray, but at the end of the day, you know, you kind of started leaning towards Ray, even though I chose Dom. But the one that we were completely split on was Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. Mm-hmm. Now, last week, you predicted Roman Reigns retaining. We talked about the 1,000 days that you think is very, very important for Roman Reigns' legacy. Mm-hmm. We pointed out last week that 1,000 days lands on King and Queen of the Ring in Saudi Arabia. The 1,000th day. But I don't know if you heard this. I brought this up yesterday. You probably haven't yet. But, you know, I want to just make a comment, and then we could talk about that match first, and then we could lead to the other matches. I have brought this up before. I don't know if you've ever done this, but I truly believe that some of our greatest brainstorming is done while we sleep. I was told when I was very, very young, keep a pad and a pen at your bedside. You might wake up in the middle of the night with an insane great idea about something, and you don't jot it down. The next day, you cannot remember for the life of you what that thought was. And too many times over the years, I would think about something while I'm sleeping. I would wake up. I would be like, holy shit, that makes sense. And then I go back to sleep. I don't jot it down. I don't remember it the next day. It happened to me Sunday night after WrestleMania 39 night 2. And I think I figured it out, Kev. I think it hit me. It hit me, and I give you all the credit in the world about Roman Reigns retaining. I think what we are witnessing right now, especially with Triple H heading creative since the summer of 2022, you look at the shift of the bloodline since the summer of 2022, almost, I don't want to say mafia-like, but almost like, you know, like we have the lead guy in Roman, you have the tag team, you have the enforcer in Solo Sikoa, you got someone else who wants to be part of that group, they bring him in, they kick him out. Then Cody Rhodes, you know, finish the story, finish this, finish that. And literally, no bullshit, 3 o'clock in the morning, late Sunday night, I woke up and I was like, I got to write this down. I cannot forget this the next day. I think what we are witnessing is Triple H, especially since Shawn Michaels recently is refurbishing his storylines from the mid-90s through Roxanne Perez and other stuff. I think Triple H is taking aspects of the Four Horsemen, that the enforcer is Solo Sikoa, the Usos are Arn and Tully, Solo could kind of be Ole, Roman Reigns is Ric Flair, Paul Heyman is J.J. Dillon, and Cody Rhodes losing was Dusty Rhodes all over again. I posted it yesterday, 4 years of Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes with matches. 90% of the outcomes were either DQs or somebody interfering or somebody cheating. And Dusty Rhodes, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, but not one of the greatest NWA champions of all time, because he only had the title for a couple of, you know, couple of months combined.
Yeah.
Dusty was always known for chasing the title. And if you're going to recreate Dusty and Flair, Dusty and the Horsemen, Dusty did not beat Flair the first time around. He got screwed. Dusty got himself disqualified, losing his temper. Other people would show up and take out Dusty, which would force him to lose sight and track of the title. Saudi Arabia is 2 months away. SummerSlam is 4 months away. And you cannot keep this feud with Roman and Cody to go for months and months and months without another match. So Brock Lesnar is the diversion. But what do you think? Are we witnessing the Four Horsemen? And you could even say, argue that Sami Zayn is Sting, when Sting wanted to be in the Horsemen. And he was young and naive, and they kicked him out and beat the fuck out of him, and it just elevated Sting to a whole new level as a babyface.
Well, I think so. You know, like anything else, something old is new again, or it's recreated. You're influenced by the past. And that's why I always, you know, when people want to fight with me on Twitter, I'm like, I'm not going to argue with a person who has to Google the name of the Von Erichs. That means you don't know wrestling history. If you don't know wrestling history, it's understandable why you get unraveled about things that you see and are so crazy to you. But to us wrestling fans, who are real students of the game, we've seen this act before. I've said this before. We've seen this act before. I brought up Flair's after he lost to Kerry in spring of 84. He got the belt back. Flair was dominant then, pretty much 84, 85. You know, there's little intermittent things. You know, he lost the title for a little bit, then got it back. But then, so 86, and then up until 87, then he lost it to Ronnie Garvin for some reason. Sting. Ric Flair was dominant for the most part. And every time, Baby Doll with a shoe, loaded purse, J.J. Dillon with a shoe, loaded shoe, Tully Blanchard comes in and trips up the leg of someone. Magnum T.A.'s whole thing with Ric Flair is he couldn't get a fair shake because he kept getting jumped by the Horsemen every time Magnum was up against him. And they took that all around the loop, DT, everywhere, from Virginia to the Carolinas to Atlanta to Florida. This, to me, like, again, and I understand I wasn't around back then, I wasn't alive back in that day, but you got YouTube, and it's so easy to be a knowledgeable wrestling fan now and follow the way things went in the past. And again, that's why I think, DT, they are bringing those ideas back, and guys like you really watching or know this wrestling game are seeing what this is, but they can put the wool over the hood of a lot of people who don't bother to learn the history or think the history is irrelevant, DT. You understand what I'm saying? They think it's like the old days. Oh, maybe it worked then for you guys because kayfabe was still a thing. Oh, bullshit. Me and you knew that it wasn't real back then. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, we didn't think that Dusty really was jumped in the parking lot and the police were called. I mean, that's ridiculous when I hear young people say, oh, back then you guys still believed. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. What it was pulled off a lot better back then because everything wasn't ruined on the internet and everything wasn't told to you in advance in the dirt sheets, man.
Exactly. And And, you know, here's what it comes down to. Like, when they did the press conference over the weekend and Triple H was asked, you know, like, about the title not changing hands, and he says the story never ends in the WWE, just new chapters are created. Yep. And news sites wrote that Triple H offers awkward offer, strange response. And I'm like, strange?
Strange.
That's the difference. The younger or people out there that don't want to learn the history will look at it as strange. Like, this doesn't make sense. Why? But I will say this, and I had a good laugh about it yesterday. You and I pointed out last week that Sami Zayn, the SmackDown after Elimination Chamber, cut a promo and said that the story never ends in the WWE. And last week, you and I pointed out that, oh, so WWE took that and now gave it to Cody. So Triple H says it in a press conference and everybody finds it weird, but that's because they don't understand. If Cody Rhodes is going to truly recreate, you know, that scenario, that storyline, and the bloodline is the Horseman, you know, he cannot win it the first time around. The Dusty, this would be the ultimate Dusty finish.
Yeah.
Dusty chasing the title was my, and listen, let's all not forget the droves of people who were bitter that Sami Zayn did not get the main event at Mania, was not added as a three-way. Don't forget about all the droves of people going into WrestleMania that were saying, you know, what if Cody's run isn't good? Should they switch it over to Sami Zayn? People were already predicting Cody's demise before he even won the championship. The only thing that is different from the 80s to now is Roman Reigns is not wrestling a boatload of house shows. Roman Reigns has a very limited work schedule. So now you cannot have Roman and Cody go up and down the house show circuit, you know, DQ on TV, this and that. So how do you go from point A to point B, which is either Saudi Arabia or SummerSlam? It's so far away. Okay, yeah. Enter Brock Lesnar. Just like what you said going back in the day with Magnum TA or Dusty Rhodes. People think that Dusty only fought Flair for two or three years. No. People would show up and attack Dusty, and that would be a way to put the feud between him and Ric Flair for the championship on ice, and Dusty now has to focus on somebody else, overcomes that person, and then gets the opportunity back. So, in my opinion, especially Triple H has this beloved. He beloves Ric Flair. Yeah. Yeah, Ric Flair, the greatest of all time, the Four Horsemen. How do you not revisit that and put it to 2023 standards? So I think that is exactly what's going on. Yes, I thought Cody finishes the story, but I'm not bullshitting. When I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I literally got wide awake and I was like, holy fuck. This is Dusty. I know they brought up Dusty, but Cody is actually now doing Dusty. That he got screwed, he got jumped, he got this. That's what made Dusty Rhodes the biggest babyface at that time. Getting and screwed, chasing a title. Yeah. You know what's happening to right now? LA Knight.
Yeah.
LA Knight right now. LA Knight lost every match to Bray Wyatt, got more popular. LA Knight doesn't get an opportunity at WrestleMania, gets more popular. LA Knight loses on SmackDown 2 weeks in a row, gets more popular. WWE is not stupid. They see that the more we take this away, the more somebody wants it. And I think that's the formula they're doing with LA Knight also on a much smaller scale.
Yeah, on a much smaller scale. But like you said, Dusty had adversity. I think a lot of even critics of Cody who didn't want Cody to get it so quick wanted Cody. Yeah, he beat Seth Rollins a few matches. Then he was off for 7 months, came back, beat people like Baron Corbin on TV in The Miz. Nothing really of note. But so to him to beat Roman one and done when Drew McIntyre tried several times. Kevin Owens tried several times and failed. All these people tried several times and failed. to have Cody come in one and done, beats Reigns, Reigns takes time off, and maybe comes back next year, and maybe they flip it where Cody's the heel and Roman comes back a hero. Who knows? But I never saw it really going that way, Anthony. No. I thought, you know, Cody is the guy, but he's not the guy right now, and he's signed to a 3 to 5 year deal. Yeah. Why does it have to be so immediate?
Because everything in this day and age has got to be instant gratification.
Quick gratification. I think, did you see the Paul Heyman interview with Ariel Helwani that aired yesterday?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes long, and Paul Heyman goes, and Ariel Helwani goes, people thought the time was now. He goes, of course they did. Everybody thinks the time is now. Everybody's in the wrestling business. Everybody knows what's best. As a fan, you're entitled to say what you think. But there's a time and place. You know, we kind of do know what we're doing here. And also, there's more story to be told. Why did it had to end there? There's no rule that this had to end at WrestleMania. It was something the fans built up in their head that it's one and done. He beats him. Roman goes away for a while. No one ever said that. That was a narrative totally put out in the rumor mill. Yeah. Completely put out in the rumor mill.
I love that you brought up the word adversity, because they keep talking about Cody Rhodes facing adversity. Kevin Patrick used that term again yesterday on Anderson, one of his most infamous quotes back in the day about Dusty Rhodes, quote, adversity introduces man to himself.
Wow. That's wow.
Yeah, I did a lot of, when it hit me at 3 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't go back to sleep. I actually had to go revisit. I had to look at the records. I had to look at everything. I looked at some of the feuds, the transcripts, the storylines, and I found that gem on Anderson. Talking about Dusty, adversity.
That's great. That's great. And of course, Arn was, you know, paired with Cody towards his late tenure there. Yeah. And so it's perhaps that Cody was not only in on this stuff, but helped plan how this whole thing went. People think he went to the back and Vince is there. You're losing tonight. Like, you know, that's that's not what happened here. Oh my God.
Can you imagine being Dusty Rhodes was the booker. A lot of time back in the day. And Dusty Rhodes was not stupid. He knew that chasing the title was more money than being the champion.
Absolutely.
For some people, they got to be the champion. But for him, it was chasing the title. Cody ain't stupid. Cody's around Dusty. Cody's around Arn. Cody's around, you know, his family. Cody knows that what made Dusty legendary and his gigantic mammoth baby face was getting screwed.
The ultimate American underdog.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. This this is going to be Cody Rhodes' version of Hard Times.
Yes, that is.
That's what it is.
That is. You're right. You're absolutely That's right. What it is. I wish more would see this.
The light bulb went off in my head Sunday night, and I was like, oh man, I can't wait for you and I to talk about this.
Look,
just when no one is requiring anyone out there to learn history, but when you don't know that something is being refurbished, recreated, inspired, or somebody tells you or somebody hints to it or it's reported, you can't turn around and just deny it and shut it down and say that it's stupid, it's weird, it's awkward, you know, whatever it is, simply so, because I think there's a lot of fans out there who are angered that Cody didn't win. So rather than trying to understand why he didn't win, no, let's just blame it on Vince, and we can complain, and get what we want. You know, and I think that takes away the beauty of being a wrestling fan.
Yeah, it does.
Can I just say one other quick thing? I said this very, very recently about AEW and WWE. Pro wrestling is supposed to break your heart. Pro wrestling, not all the time, but Pro wrestling has to break your heart once in a while. And this weekend, almost every outcome, it did not break our hearts.
No.
Almost everything had the outcomes that everybody was fine with. And it really was there. Kev, can you think of any other match that went on this way? Maybe people were angry about Ronda and Shayna winning, but really, was there maybe Bianca and Asuka? But even with that, Kev, do you feel like there's any momentum right now where Asuka should be dethroned? I mean,
we both picked Bianca, and I thought that was the right move. I think the only match maybe people wanted to see for fandom's sake, John Cena beat Big Mouth Austin Theory, but the money is Austin Theory. He's the future. John Cena is in another profession now. Yeah. He's loyal to the cause. But he had to do the job. Austin Theory is the future. You know, I don't have to like the kid, but I think a few years from now, some of the Austin Theory detractors might grow to like him.
Let me ask you about that match, because that was the opening match for.
Yeah, we might as well get into it now.
I mean, I honestly thought we got what we. I think we got what we expected to get. Like John Cena. No tan, you know, like
very, very pale. I've never seen Cena. Cena was white as Munster cheese. Yeah. Seriously, like he was really white. You know, he's got the bald spot now and stuff. You know, people get on him about that. I mean, he's 45 years old. I mean, you know, he's still got a good physique, but he's not as big. Austin Theory was clearly bigger, more jacked than he was. Austin is young enough to be his son. They're 20 years apart. So, but yeah, Cena looked a little pale. But listen, you know, Cena, you can argue he's a Mount Rushmore guy. But putting over Austin Theory was absolutely the right thing to do. There's a little arguing back and forth that Cena should have got the win, you know, Hollywood. Nah, I don't think so. I think the right move was made there.
I agree. And you know what the interesting thing is with Cena? This is how I honestly look at it. Cena, I'm sure he trained for this match. But since he keeps himself in such unbelievable shape and cardio, I don't think it probably took him more than maybe a couple of days to get ready for this match. And it just seems like he could have went to the barber, got a little bit of a crew cut. We would have saw no bald spot, just, hey, can you cut a little bit you know, shorter this time around? And, you know, and he grows it back in 2-3 weeks. So didn't even get a haircut, didn't spray tan. You know, it was almost like, let me fly in, let me let Austin Theory put me over, and I fly back out and I leave.
That's what it seemed like to me. It did seem like that to me. And I think his thing is cemented. I mean, you know, people want to go and you know, how fans who don't like him, they can go, they may, he looked like shit. I think he looked like, people weren't accustomed to seeing him so pale. And, you know, he does look like he got off the plane, they had some clothes for him in the merch area that he put on, and he came out. Yeah, I don't know how much he put into this. But listen, he also didn't have to do this.
Right.
You know, so he came in. I think he likes Austin Theory. I actually saw some still pictures of him hanging out with Austin Theory at WrestleMania. So people were like, oh, I bet he doesn't even like him. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about. And that whole buried him in the promo thing didn't hurt Austin Theory one bit.
Not at all. Not at all.
Didn't hurt him one bit.
No. So, you know, Austin Theory. And plus, I think that's the reason why that was match one for the night. And even Brock and Omos was match one for night two. It's not that the legends just want to leave, you know, the building as quickly as they can. I don't think it's just that. I think that by putting it on as the first match, you're just warming up the crowd. Like, if John Cena, you look at the rest of the card, if John Cena and Austin Theory would have been like match 2, 4, 5, I think people would have started expecting something a little bit more. Because now when you look at the other matches that went on that night, there really was not a bad match at all. And I don't count Pat McAfee and The Miz actual match. Right. You know, so you put even the men's tag team match as the first match of the night. Then you'd have people say, wow, look how they followed that tag match. They gave us a crappy match between Austin Theory and John Cena. So I thought it was a fun little opener. You know, it went 11 minutes, you know, which I think a lot of people would be surprised to realize. It went 11 minutes. This was not a four-minute match and done. But it to me, it felt like, okay, you know, Cena agrees to go to WrestleMania, shows up, you know, does the thing, helps Austin Theory, you know, and then gets on a plane and leaves.
Yeah, I'm looking at the G.I. Joe shirt. That's a pretty nice shirt they had on sale at WrestleMania for Cena.
Yeah.
Boy, they didn't have shirts like that back in our day, Anthony, in the 80s. Jesus. The Billy Jack hat and peace sign. But I agree with you. I mean, you know, we can break down the matches because I guess people like to hear us do it in chronological order. But the first match, I was excited from the get-go of seeing WrestleMania 1. I was kind of half because I was at work at the time. But we have Peacock at the bar, and we had it in the office. And I watched the whole card the next day, but I saw the Mysterio and Dominic match as it happened that night. But I saw the whole card, obviously, because I knew we were going to review this show. But, yeah, even watching on the replay, I was, like, sitting on the edge of my couch. I was, like, excited to watch it. Yeah. I mean, I was, again, I didn't even let anything I saw on Twitter, you know, take me out of it or whatever. I'll skip this match or whatever. I watched the whole thing thoroughly. Watched it kind of twice, to be honest.
Yeah.
I watched almost the full night one twice.
The men's showcase match, the Street Profits beat Braun and Ricochet, Alpha Academy, and the Viking Raiders. Braun and Ricochet already had their tag team title shot. Viking Raiders, you know, they seem a little bit stuck in the mud. Alpha Academy, very pleasantly surprised that they did not split them up. I got a kick out of when Chad Gable was really kicking ass in the ring and the crowd was showing appreciation and he just looked at the crowd and went, oh, thank you. That I pop for. Little things like that I pop for. But I'll say this, and this is why I'm glad we did this after the Raw, after WrestleMania. Street Profits get the win. Show up on Raw, challenge Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, non-title match. Not only do they lose, Montez Ford gets pinned clean. The Street Profits won the showcase match. The next night, they lose clean, and all their momentum is sent to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
Do you think this team is splitting up?
I don't know. And again, Hawkins?
Angelo Dawkins.
Dawkins. He's looking as good physically as Montez. He's determined to not, you know, as he says, not be a Jannetty, you know, of the team. That, you know, he's got himself in shape. He's been great in the ring. Saw with him give that clothes that when he took out Braun Strowman the other night.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, that was great. So he's Dawkins is kind of showing. No, I'm in this. And if they split us, I am not going to be the guy who gets Future Endeavor or the Marty Jannetty who goes those jobs. I'm in this game, and I like it. I like their attitude, but I think maybe that's in both their heads now, and that, you know, they're just deciding, yeah, we're gonna run the Street Profits, let them run out the clock, and then we have plans for both of them as individuals. I mean, listen, Anthony, it's very rare that you can get, you know, Scott Steiner, Rick Steiner, you did get two solo stars to a degree out of that tag team. They never quite did it with Ricky Morton and Robbie Gibson. It was Ricky Morton. With Shawn Michaels, it was Shawn Michaels, not Marty Jannetty. If you can get two guys out of a tag team and make them individual stars, it's very rare.
Yeah.
You know, it's very rare. So maybe that's the plan, and they're like, you know what, we're going to split these guys anyway, so let's just let them job to Owens and Sammy. They're both babyface teams, too, so I was a little surprised.
That's what I was going to ask you next. Yeah. If they do remain a tag team, even though we all know Montez Ford has a crazy upside and a positive future, what about turning them heel?
Yeah, that's a possibility too. I mean, why not? I mean, they both.
We haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, they haven't really seen that yet. I think both of them. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. And maybe there is some confusion of what the direction of the future is for them right now. Maybe there is some, you know, back and forth debate in the back. Maybe Triple H sees them one way. Maybe someone sees them another way. Who knows? But they both have tremendous upside. I mean, both of those guys, they're a great team. But I'm not going to say they've accomplished all they can. And it's not like, you know, they're the Road Warriors. They're so decorated. But again, you can get either or out of them, which is rare. You can get solo stardom out of both of them. Who knows? Maybe Dawkins will go further than Montez. He's got a good personality, too. Absolutely. But Montez just seems to have it. You know, he's a little bit more handsome, and he's a little bit more charismatic. Dresses better, obviously. They were even talking about that on the pre-show. Mm-hmm. Montez was dressed to impress, and Dawkins was just dressed like blah. You know what I mean? Yeah. They were making fun of him back there that Dawkins had a plain suit on. He goes, look at your partner. How come you're not all, you know, spiffed up? You know, so maybe that's a little thing where they kind of, you know, razz Dawkins a little bit that, yeah, you got to roll like Montez. Maybe it's a little thing that they're doing behind the scenes, you know, to just get his goat a little bit. But again, I don't know if maybe they really know what the direction is. And there's so many guys ahead of the line, though, DT, you know, not just with Cody, but there's other people, too, on the upswing. So I don't know where Montez or Dawkins fits in, unless you're right, unless they go heel. But right now we have a heel champion, and still, I still believe the heir to the throne is Cody. So maybe IC title. I mean, Montez can maybe go after Gunther. Maybe there's a brand split again or a trade.
Yeah.
You know, send the Street Profits to SmackDown. I don't know.
That could happen. That could
along with well Bianca, happen. She might need fresh. Freshening up too.
Yeah, because, she does. She does.
We'll get into her. You know.
Yeah. Later. Very interesting. Last night on Raw, when she had the face to face with Rhea Ripley, that crowd was more in favor of Rhea Ripley.
They were.
Very interesting. And obviously, when we get to that, you know, that women's match with Rhea and Charlotte, I think people understand why. Seth Rollins beating Logan Paul, and basically Logan Paul did somewhat of the Shawn Michaels WrestleMania entrance, you know, coming down on that cable, which looked cool. KSI, who was under, you know, they have this Prime energy drink. So he basically was under the like a bottle. You know, he came out dressed like a mascot, like a bottle of Prime energy drink. I thought it was Jake Paul under the, you know, under the bottle was going to reveal to be Jake Paul. It ended up being KSI, who is a social media guy, YouTuber.
I had to look him up, DT. I didn't know who he was. And actually, I know it doesn't really look like it, but that outfit reminded me of when Eddie Murphy used to do Gumby on Saturday Night Live.
I'm Gumby, damn it.
I was like, I didn't know who was under there, but even when they revealed him and the crowd popped, I'm like, am I old? I don't know who this guy is. Yeah. Like, I didn't know who he was.
I didn't know who he was. Yeah. I knew he was, but like, I've never like watched him do anything.
Let me ask the chat room. Did you guys know who that guy was in the chat room? Did you guys know who that guy was when they revealed him? There's a lot of young guys in the chat room.
Yeah. Yesterday, some people said that they did. A lot of people thought it was R-Truth.
I thought it was still when they first revealed him.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been kind of comedic, you know, because I think R-Truth, yeah, but R-Truth is not going to play heel. I don't know how much R-Truth is back from his injury.
Yeah,
you know, he had that horrible injury, but KSI ended up eating a frog splash by Logan Paul through the announcer's table. And I tell you, the first time I saw it, I thought they fucked up big time because Logan Paul didn't start the frog splash. And Seth Rollins already started pushing KSI away. But when I watched the replay, they did something. It's little things that a lot of us don't pick up on the first time around that you appreciate later on. Logan Paul, to basically take his eye off of KSI, and I'm telling you, I bet you this was a Seth Rollins call. The timing has to be so perfect that, you know, Logan Paul... The time it takes to do the frog splash to go through the table is only a second or two. So what they did was, as Seth Rollins is pushing KSI, pulling himself out of the way and putting KSI on the table, Logan Paul is drinking the energy drink, looking up in the air and spitting it like Triple H. So Logan Paul doing that, he did not notice that KSI was pulled onto the table. He started doing the frog splash and looked down, too late. I mean, he just went through his partner. And that little aspect, when I watched the replay, I was like, oh, that was good. That was really good. But Seth Rollins, you know, getting a rare WrestleMania win. But,
yeah, I think we both picked him too. I mean, Seth has done enough jobs here. It was time for him to get some thank you from the back, and it was the way it needed to go because, you know, Logan Paul is a part timer, and Seth is here. He's here week in, week out. There was no way he could lose to Logan on that, even on some like fucklery. Seth needed a win, and he got it.
I love the conductor thing that they did, even though a lot of that was piped in.
Oh, it was piped
in. Yeah, some of it early on was piped in because they wanted it to be so perfect, but it was great.
Yeah, I guess it was piped in. Yeah, it was. I mean, it was very, you know, that's the thing now. I mean, people like doing that stuff now. It's, it's the move. You know, several wrestlers have it, not just Jericho. So, that's the thing to do now. I mean, you know, whatever lets people have fun.
Now the big question is, what's next for Seth Rollins?
I don't know what is next for Seth Rollins. I don't know.
Does he go after Roman now? Since Cody is now busy with Brock?
Since he's freed up and maybe Cody meets, because rematch was brought up. We'll bring that up again later as we finish reviewing the main match that happened on Sunday. But, yeah, I'm thinking with the rematch, probably at SummerSlam, even though it was funny when Paul Heyman was in the ring on Raw last night, you're not getting a rematch in Puerto Rico. You're not getting a rematch at SummerSlam. You're not getting a rematch at Survivor Series. Like, you know, that was pretty funny that he was naming. But I think it will go to SummerSlam. Maybe it will go to Survivor. Maybe it'll go all the way to the WrestleMania next year. Seth Rollins could be the interim guy to deal with. He just beat Logan Paul. He's been on top of his game. Number one babyface now next to Cody Rhodes. I wouldn't say he's neck and neck. He's slightly behind Cody as top babyface. And he can make an argument that, hey, I should get another title shot. Cody's tied up with Brock. And, yeah, why not separate him a little bit? And it'll taper things down for the people who are all up in arms that Cody didn't win. You know, it'll distract them a little bit.
Yeah, I think right now Bobby Lashley is in the position where Seth Rollins was in the summertime. When Seth Rollins' SummerSlam, I think it was SummerSlam match, got bumped, and he went on social media and he said to the WWE Universe, he said, one day they'll listen to you. And Triple H tweeted Seth Rollins back that same day and said, I hear you, or I'm listening, or, you know, like, and to me, that was a great little gesture. It was Triple H basically saying, like, look, just, you know, give it a little more time. And you look at Seth Rollins, where he was in the summer of last year to now, you know, it's incredible how over he is and how everything is clicking. So yeah. I think Bobby Lashley right now is in the same position Seth Rollins was the summer of last year. Because Bobby Lashley wins the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which I think we both figured. I think a lot of people figured that would be it. But WrestleMania, you know, does not have a match. Goes out there, poses, you know, celebrates the win, and goes to the back, and nothing with him. No, nothing with LA Knight. Are you surprised about that? Nothing for LA Knight. Nothing.
I was surprised. I mean, I know Cross is doing a little thing. I don't know if there's a feud plan with them down the road. Cross and Lashley do match up well, both 6'3", 6'4", both about 270, 275, so they match up very well. You know, maybe there is something in the works. We even have LA Knight come and try to smash the statue. I mean, LA Knight maybe come out and challenge Bobby Lashley. I mean, we can get into Knight too. Because a lot of people thought the Shane McMahon thing was a complete waste of time, and that should have been perhaps LA Knight or somebody like that, or Bronson Reed comes out and challenges Bobby Lashley, you know, for the because he was the last one thrown out in the Andre the Giant. There were so many ways they could have went with that, but like sticking, I don't want to get too away from Night One. We were just on Rollins and Logan Paul. But so what was the next match after that one?
It was Lita, Becky Lynch, and Trish Stratus beating Damage Control. Fun match. I think Lita and Trish were a very crisp. Definitely Lita's looked better than she did when they first won the tag titles. No heel turn by Trish. But on Raw, we saw a little something yesterday where Becky and Lita were cutting a promo because next week they're going to face Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez for the tag titles, and then they walked off, and they left Trish standing there, and Trish had this awkward look to Byron Saxton like, yeah, they forgot about me, and then she walked off. So, you know, last week you and I both called, you know, the Legends and Becky to defeat Damage Control. A lot of people thought Trish was going to turn heel. I don't think that happens yet, but, you know, Trish, I tell you, you know, refurbishing her outfit from like 17, 18 years ago.
Yeah.
Crowd loved it. It, to me, it was nostalgia. It did what it needed to do. I mean, Sky, Kai, and Bayley are, you know, very good at what they do in the ring. Unfortunately, their character development is less to be desired at times. But, you know, in the end, it's Becky Lynch, you know, giving Bayley the manhandle slam and getting the pin. So Lita, no Trish getting a pin in this match, but they do get the win.
Yeah, I thought the match was okay. Trish looked great. I thought Trish was great. Lita was still very slow, just a very slow motion. Lita is showing her age. Yeah. And I think Trish is actually older than Lita and has kids.
Yeah.
So Trish, I think, well, Trish, you know, owns that yoga studio. She's really in top shape. I mean, Lita looks good physically, but I think cardio-wise and just inner and outer health, Trish is just better. And Trish's look, she really looks good. She really looks great. Lita was just a little slow motion, a little hesitant on certain moves that she was doing to the other girls. And again, those girls are 15 years her junior.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Dakota Kai's a lot younger than Lita. So I think it was just a game of trying to keep up. And Lita maybe just not being in that kind of condition. But, I think Trish might turn heel. That it could be true. I thought the Bayley thing, I thought they would maybe jump Bayley because they're tired of losing, Bayley, have Bayley become a babyface. And then Bayley wasn't on Raw last night, and there was no mention of her.
Right. You want to know something? I know that there's uproar online that Bayley got bumped again for Raw, but I honestly think, and nobody talked about this today, so you and I will talk about it because we'll probably end up being right, but it could very well end up happening. If Damage Control was supposed to turn on Bailey. You don't want it to be rushed. So maybe Bailey was removed from Raw yesterday because they did not want Bailey seen with damage control. The next time Bailey is seen with damage control, that's when damage control turns on him. Maybe Bailey starts talking smack to them. You lost, you lost, you lost. And, you know, because they did lose on Raw.
And
you
they
know,
lost again last night. Again,
so
right.
I personally think that if damage control and Bailey are splitting, then it was definitely the right move to keep Bailey off of Raw yesterday because you don't, that next interaction is the split. So we will see what happens next week. But if they do have that split next week, then I think there's going to be a lot of people with these political tweets and everything are probably going to regret it and say, you know what, it was better they did not have Bailey on Raw because you don't want that to be rushed. But I tell you, I'll say this in conclusion about this women's tag match at WrestleMania. You see Trish, and I agree with you, Lita looked better than when she won the tag titles, but she definitely has lost a lot of speed. I think timing is a little off. But when I look at Trish, I'm a little surprised how little she has wrestled in the last 10 years.
Yeah, she hasn't wrestled much at all, and she knows where she is at all times in the ring. I just think, I don't know, maybe, sometimes you don't know how people are going to age, and, you'd say, oh, this one's younger than this one, but this one just kept herself up better, or this guy kept himself up better. It all depends, I think. But, yeah, Trish seems to know the ring a lot better than Lita. I was just watching. I watched the match again. And I'm like, yeah, Trish is on point. Lita is the weak link of her team. And normally that wouldn't have been the case back in the day.
Just so people get an idea of how little Trish has wrestled, okay? This is going back. She, since 2006, okay? That's 17 years ago. She wrestled one time in 2008, two times in 2009. She wrestled four times in 2011, and then that was it. She came back in 2018 for the Royal Rumble. She did Evolution in 2018. Her and Lita beat Alicia Fox and Mickie James. She was on the Raw the following night, and then that was it. She came back August of 2019 for a tag match, Becky and Charlotte versus Natty and Trish. She showed up at SummerSlam where she lost to Charlotte, and then we have WrestleMania. So Trish Stratus at WrestleMania, that was her first match in 4 years.
That's amazing. That's absolutely
almost
amazing.
Almost 3.5 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, no injuries, but when you really start thinking about that, in the last 12 years, she has wrestled six times. In 12 years.
Yeah, she just, I think Fit Finley trained her really well, and I think she just became a student of the game, and she knows wrestling. And she just has it, you know, that it factor that very few people have, and they can come back in like a duck to water and do it. And she's one of the women that I see can do it. Now, I always thought I was always interested to see Medusa come and get back in the ring and figure she would take like a duck to water. I'm surprised they haven't coaxed Medusa back into the ring more than the one time. Yes. I think she appeared at Evolution, right?
Yeah.
I'm surprised they haven't coaxed her back in to the ring. I'd like to see. I mean, she's maybe 10 years older than Trish. But, yeah, Lita, Lita did have injuries. Lita had the big neck injury, as everybody remembers. Back in the day, didn't she have her neck fused, DT?
I believe so.
Yeah. So maybe she's a little hesitant. She's in her mid-40s. She does other things for a living now. I know she does a lot of volunteer work with the Rescue Dog Center where she lives. So maybe she just doesn't want to take too many risks. She did her lead assault, did that okay, but was very hesitant in other moves. Very hesitant.
Yeah, I think Trish is going to get the Saudi Arabia payday.
I think so. That's a good call.
That amount of money, it's too much to pass up, you know. And, you know, now she has had, you know, a little bit of return to the ring, and she seems to be okay. So, they're obviously keeping her around for a reason. I mean, you know, she could have simply gone back home, and Lita and Becky could have been the only two on TV yesterday. Yeah. So they're keeping her around because she's definitely going to have another match, and I think Saudi Arabia might be where it happens. And I think, and I still think the scenario you and I talked about last week where Trish Stratus says, I'm the reason why you got those titles, and I'm the reason why you lost those titles.
I can totally put you on, yeah.
Yeah. All right, next match, Dominic Mysterio losing to Rey Mysterio. Bad Bunny on the Spanish announce table during the match. Dominic coming out with the doing this whole prison deal where he's being escorted out of prison.
I thought I was seeing the reincarnation of Nathan Jones.
That oh, my God. That was interesting. You know, it was – I mean, it's funny because, you know, Dominic just coming off as thinking he's street thug when he's chicken shit. That's what makes it so amazing. But when they're escorting him, it was almost kind of like a weird version of Goldberg, like in an alternate universe. Like instead of like just like knocking on the door and all the security is around him, it kind of was like a demented Goldberg entrance. You know, like somebody hacked a video game.
Yeah, it was a great entrance. I mean, even from the music, from the it was a great entrance. I mean, I liked Ray's entrance too, obviously with the Eddie Guerrero music, the Snoop Dogg music first, morphing into the Eddie Guerrero theme, then the Rey Mysterio theme. But Dominic's entrance was one of like top guys. I thought it was really, really good. That I think that elevates him in the eyes of the fans. We know that Dom's not a top guy, but we know he's important to the show. Yeah. Now he's a player. Now, wouldn't you say, DT, he's a player?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's a player. Yeah.
I've sung the praise for Dominic for a very, very long time. And I don't remember what episode it was. I'm sure people could search it, but there was one night, and I remember on my synopsis, it was the first sentence I wrote for that night's episode, and I said, Dominic Mysterio and Austin Theory had their coming out parties that night. I don't remember when it was, but he's made it. He has made it. There's a video floating around of him, I think, leaving WrestleMania in an SUV in the passenger seat, and he's giving everybody the finger. I mean, he's spectacular, and I'm enjoying it. And Ray, I got to tell you, man, I love the nostalgia. You know what? I actually enjoyed Snoop Dogg at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I normally find him overbearing because he's so everywhere. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? He's from, you know, Martha Stewart commercials to Jimmy Fallon to, the, you know, from hip-hop to even game shows. He's everywhere. And, you know, listen, props. He's an entertainer. He's an all-around entertainer. He's, you know, some people would say like a modern, like what Sammy Davis Jr. was in the 60s and 70s. He's everywhere. So, I mean, you know, Snoop is beyond pop culture for one period of time. He's now on three decades of celebrityism, which is very rare for anybody. Yeah. You know, usually at some point you taper out. You know what I mean? I mean, only even in metal, like Metallica and Guns N' Roses, the only two bands who've kept up that major fan base. So Snoop Dogg, I got to give him credit. He's always been famous and successful, and he's never been, you know, down to the C squad, you know, being on reality shows and shit. He's another player, no pun intended. But I did enjoy him. Like, I didn't find him irritating. I actually find The Miz really irritating. But I also feel beating up The Miz has become, you know, it's old hat at this point. I don't get much pleasure, even though you want to see the big mouth get hit and you always want to see Miz, but it's become where everybody beats him up now. It's becoming, I don't know, I didn't find it entertaining on either night what they did to him, in my opinion.
Yeah. I was very surprised. I mean, I honestly thought we were going to see points in the match where Dominic plays a little psychology on Ray.
Yeah.
And, you know, like returns with the attitude like, Dad, I'm sorry, I love you. You know, like a little bit of psychology.
Yeah, like he brings him in and then you know, low blows him again. Yeah, low blows him, yeah.
But we didn't get that. Mom, Angie, the potted plant leader at ringside, she actually slapped Dominic. And I tell you, you know, as much as I used to criticize jokingly Angie in the past, I think her and Aaliyah have done their jobs perfectly in this whole thing. I mean, even Saturday when Dominic went up to them and she had a drink and he just grabbed that drink and threw it in her face. And there's a lot of people today, even though it's just liquid, would like close their eyes and put their hands up. And she just stood there and took it like she didn't expect it at all. Yeah. And her reaction afterwards, everything that they have done. And you know what? It's probably easier when you're doing it with family.
You know, I would say so. Yeah, I would say so, too. And also, I didn't know. I mean, I found out at the Hall of Fame that Ray has been with his wife his entire life. Yeah. They met at 15 and have never been apart.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable. And wrestling, Ray's going to be 50.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's been with his wife for 35 years. That's unbelievable.
That's great.
So, yeah, they're close family. And I think that's why they know each other so well. I mean, my God.
Yeah.
You know, they come as a package deal at this point, that whole family.
And the Hall of Fame shit was incredible. Loved Conan's speech.
I mean, oh, he was great. Great.
He did Ray proud, and Ray's speech also. It just really, you know, it really is, you know, legendary, like how great that was. But, you know, as I'm thinking about what Conan was saying about Ray, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking back a couple of years ago. And when, you know, we didn't know anything about Dom yet, but Conan would say a couple of things. I think Lance Storm would say a couple of things. Like, there was some buzz like, no, he's got something. He's got something. I don't think they envisioned that he would be this chicken shit, you know, like street thug, you know, ex-con Dom. But where did this fucking personality come from?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's got no history in, like, AAA or in Mexico Indies where he was playing, like, this little chicken shit heel. Like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
Because, I don't know. I mean,
Maybe studying the old Eddie Guerrero Art Bar or Los Gringos Locos gimmick. I mean, Dom does borrow a lot from Los Gringos Locos.
Yes.
Which is, you know, which again, it's part of the family. If anybody even remembers Art Bar, I know you do, DT. Yeah. Some of you guys might remember him for a stint as Beetlejuice in 1990 in WCW. But he is the brother, by the way, of Jimmy Jack Funk, Jesse Barr, who's still alive, by the way, Jesse Barr. But yeah, I mean, he is from the haircut to the way of wrestling to the body type. He has a physique like Art Barr. So, I mean, I think he studies the Los Gringos Locos stuff, I think, and that's not a bad thing to copy.
Yeah. Well, Dominic, full-blown heel. Entire match. Damian Priest shows up planting some seeds, and you said it even last week that we were going to get Damian Priest and Dominic versus Ray and Bad Bunny at Backlash, and that's exactly where they're going with it, you know, because on Raw the following night, you know, Ray is in the ring with Austin Theory and he loses due to Dominic's interference. Dominic gives him a beatdown after Bad Bunny's at ringside, and Dominic gets in Bad Bunny's face. And he goes to hit Bad Bunny, and Bad Bunny just decks him. Yeah. And Damian Priest, because we know the history of Damian Priest and Bad Bunny, Damian Priest is like, why did you get involved? Just stay out of it. And then he pulls Bad Bunny over the barricade, and Dom's about to hit him again, and Bad Bunny whacks him, nails him on his ass again, and then Damian Priest just chokeslams him through the table.
Yeah, Damian Priest, and I said it today with Mish. I was saying, because I'm a big Damian Priest fan, I always think that they could do more with him. And I know he just turned 40. He's, you know, but 40, as you know, in wrestling is not old anymore. But, you know, you got to pull the trigger on a 40-year-old sooner than later. And I thought that was his moment, because people say, oh, well, Kev, he was already affiliated with Bad Bunny. Yes, in a friendly babyface way, but he just beat down the most popular artist in Puerto Rico and in the Latin community in general. This is star-making power for Damian Priest. Before, he was just the wrestler who was friends with Bad Bunny. Now he's the adversary who fucked up Bad Bunny. Now he's going home to Puerto Rico, where Damian Priest spent some time in between growing up in the Bronx and Puerto Rico, if you know his story. And this is huge for him. I think this is going to elevate Damian Priest to the next level, because he's bigger than just being a henchman for Judgment Day. He's bigger than that.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is going to be, obviously Backlash is going to be more Latino filled as far as talent goes.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I don't think people understand like how big this is for Damian Priest in Puerto Rico.
Bigger than
I think people realize. But
I'm for Dominic.
Yeah, Dominic as well. Absolutely. But I love the match. I love the story. Even though Dom did not play any reverse psychology on Ray. He was full-blown asshole the entire match. Ray even whipping him with a belt, you know, which gives me flashbacks when I was a kid. You know, I got whipped with the belt.
Me too.
Everything about the match, and it was the right outcome. It was the right. I honestly, you know, I expected a little bit different, you know, with the match. But after you watch it, you're like, all right, you know, you're looking at this Mania and everything that's happening so far is kind of pretty much okay. They're giving us what we want. You know, so far, no arguments. And then the next match, which I got to be honest with you, it was my favorite match of the night. I was so pleased to see this go down. I mean, obviously, you and I said it all along. We all knew people were clickbaiting for weeks about it. There was no way that anything other than the Usos versus Zayn and Owens was going to close out WrestleMania. But Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair was the next to last match. Rhea Ripley beat Charlotte Flair for the SmackDown Women's Championship. I have already watched that match three times.
I watched it twice. I loved it.
And listen, I don't remember who said it. Might have been Cornette or Brian Last. One of them said, this might be the greatest women's wrestling match that we have seen in not necessarily history, but in decades. You know, and this match, everything about it clicked. And it blows me away because leading up to it, it was too relaxed. You know, Rhea Ripley, oh, Charlotte, I need to prove that I am a star. You know, like, it was too relaxed. And then they had that one big pull apart, which I honestly thought would have been perfect to lead into WrestleMania. Not do it, and then the week after, oh, Charlotte, last week I showed you. You're like, no. Yeah. Like, if that would have been, now, obviously, they needed a week to recharge a little bit. That's why they didn't do it the night before. But this match was incredible. And I got to say this. I know a lot of people are not going to like this. And I do admit, a lot of times when Charlotte is facing someone, Charlotte doesn't give that much. Charlotte gave a boatload to Rhea Ripley. And after the match is over, and Charlotte Flair, and they're putting the camera on her. So they didn't try to hide it. They actually went back to her two or three times. She was on the floor outside the ring, and she was smiling. And this was kind of like the Sasha Banks, Bianca Belair moment. Once again, this was, in a much smaller scale, the Roxanne Perez, Indy Hartwell moment from Stand and Deliver.
Yeah.
What did you think of this match? Because I've watched it three times already, and I'm not exaggerating. I remember a match in 1995. It was Medusa, Alondra Blaze, excuse me, versus, not Bertha Faye,
Monster Ripper?
No. Oh, shit. Who was it? Oh, God. Who was the other?
Nakano. Bull Nakano. Thank you, Tommy.
Yeah, Bull Nakano. Thank you, Tommy. Bull Nakano. And I always thought, as far as, like, ability, match, moves, I thought that was one of my favorite matches in the last 30 years, almost, watching women's wrestling. But, yes, Saturday's match, you didn't need thumbtacks. You didn't need blood. You didn't need tables. I'm not throwing shade to Britt Baker and, you know, anybody else. But, you know, this was a brawl, a wild fucking brawl. And everything about it to me clicked. I absolutely loved this match. And, go ahead.
I agree. I mean, and listen, this is the template of top women's wrestling. This is what separates, quite honestly, WWE's women's division. As much as a lot of people complain about the underlings and the undercard and the midcard girls, but these top women are top of their field. Charlotte is fucking good. I get so tired of people. Oh, Ric Flair's daughter gets whatever she wants, takes time off anytime she wants, barely comes to work, you know, gets the treatment, the Charlotte Flair treatment. Charlotte Flair is one of the best, whether you like it or not. I don't even know why it's debatable. Rhea Ripley has gotten better. 2 years ago, I thought Rhea Ripley was on the scrap heap. She was just teaming with any random that they gave her. She was nowhere. And so Rhea Ripley, Dom Mysterio, Damian Priest, these are all people 2-3 years ago that you would have been like, they're going to be on the next bus flip. There's nothing from. That's why never give up on Cross, never give up on Bronson Reed. These guys can make it. They're a push away, a match away, a moment away from having their time too. So that's why I'm keeping the faith for those guys, DT. I'm sure you are too. Yeah. But Rhea Ripley is a good example. We just said Dom Mysterio's one, Damian Priest is another. Of a lot of people probably, like a year ago, And same thing, Rhea Ripley, she was supposed to be a hot prospect. Then she kind of floundered for the last years. Judgment Day, initially off the ground, people were skeptical, I don't know about this faction. Now it's a major faction. It's not the Bloodline, but they're right behind the Bloodline and second biggest heel faction in the whole fucking company out of all three brands. And Rhea Ripley did a great job. I mean, and both of those women, DT, are athletic and powerful. Yeah. I'd say not as strong as Bianca Belair naturally, but I would put Bianca number one, Charlotte number two, and Rhea number three as far as natural power, not enhanced by growth hormone drugs like other people in other companies. But they're just both powerful girls. Now, Charlotte's got 10 years in age on Rhea Ripley. I don't know if you guys know. She's literally about a decade older. But they both, Charlotte's like a stud whore. I mean, she's like a stud. She's really like a female stud. I don't see her at all. I don't even think she wrestles like her father. She's nothing in common with Ric Flair other than the entrance of the robes. Yeah. Other than that, it stops there. Flair has never been that athletic in his life or much of a daredevil like Charlotte is. And Rhea is really grown leaps and bounds. How old is Rhea Ripley, DT? 26?
I'll pull it up right now. Rhea Ripley is, I have it right
25?
Here. She is 26 years old. She will, she'll be 27 on October 11th.
And Charlotte's 36, correct?
Charlotte Flair, I will pull her up right now. Charlotte Flair is, she is 37.
Wow. Oh, wait. Okay, she's 11 years old.
I got news for you. She'll be 38 tomorrow. April 5th.
So Charlotte Flair will be 38 tomorrow. So and got in the business late. Got in the business, what, at 28? Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these two girls, they showed why the women's division is still good. I know a lot of people poo-poo on it, as you say, DT, because they see, Liv Morgan and stuff, and, stop-start pushes, and Lacey Evans, and the failure of that, three different gimmicks. But these the top girls that we have in WWE, they're the best. They're still the best. And Charlotte Rhea Ripley was a fantastic match. I don't think anybody gave that less than a 9 out of 10. I mean, I don't know if it was the best women's match of all time. That might be pushing it. But it's up there, DT. Look, those pictures are rare. That Rhea and Charlotte are in tremendous shape. They look great, and it's all natural. It's not by drug enhancement. And Rhea, 26, we got a lot of years with this girl at the top of the heap.
Yeah, I want to point something out about Charlotte. It's just a random stat, but I think it's something that people should keep it in perspective, because we heard that Charlotte's going to take a little time off, and some people are like, oh, why is she taking time off? She really hasn't done too much since she's been back. Let this sink in a little bit. We just had a conversation about Trish Stratus, and since 2006, she's wrestled a very small number of matches. All right, Trish Stratus in 2006, when she pretty much was retired and doing almost very little, she was 30 years old.
Wow.
So Charlotte Flair is going to be 38.
Tomorrow, you said, right?
Oh, 39. Yeah, but think about that. Let that sink in. Trish Stratus retired pretty much around 30 years old. So it is very rare in the world of pro wrestling that someone does wrestle at an older age. You look at Mickie James, I'm going to pull up her age right now. Mickie James is 43. Mickie James might be the ultimate exception to the rule. I don't consider Mae Young or Moolah because, their workload was much different. But, Mickie James and Charlotte Flair, we have like Melina and some others that still work a little bit, but it's almost crazy to think that, Charlotte Flair might start entering the decline. She just shows no signs of it right now. But when you realize we're not talking about 30-year-old Charlotte, we're talking about almost 40-year-old Charlotte.
That's unbelievable. Wow, it's her birthday tomorrow. That's amazing.
It's pretty wild. But I absolutely love this match, and you know, nothing that we could say could do it justice. But they just told an unbelievable story. I love that WWE gave them 24 minutes. They gave them the same amount of time that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn got with the Usos, almost identical times.
And DT, what about when Rhea, that was a close call, where it looked like Charlotte was going to land literally on the top of her head and hit the bridge of her nose. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah, she got the cut on her face. Yeah, she got that cut on her face. And Rhea Ripley with that DDT, that looked amazing, too.
They had
some close calls, but... You know,
they pulled it off without hurting each other. Yeah,
no, they work spectacularly. And you know what? The fans recognized it. They loved it. Charlotte Flair online showing respect. And that is why when Bianca and Rhea were face to face on Raw, it was about 60-40, 65-35 in favor of Rhea Ripley with the fans. The fans acknowledged what we witnessed at WrestleMania. Nothing against Bianca. Bianca and Asuka had a great match as well, but it was nowhere on the level of what we got with Charlotte.
Charlotte and Rhea was a great match. Yeah.
And you know what's interesting?
Good lead into the main event, co-main event.
Yeah. What's interesting, I'll say this in closing, with Rhea Ripley, you know, when we look at other women like Trish, people will be like, oh, Lita is the greatest rivalry. You look at, you know, other people, oh, that's a Rhea Ripley. You know, 10 years from now, we may look back and consider Charlotte Flair a greatest rivalry.
Yeah, we probably will. Again, people not appreciating it now might look at Charlotte from different color glasses, so to speak, down the road and see that she wasn't just a Nepo baby, that she did earn her keep. She was really that good. And the Ric Flair, she just happens to have Ric Flair as her father, but she definitely paved her own way. I do not believe nepotism trounced her talent.
No.
You know, Charlotte Flair is a talent. You don't have to like her, but come on, let's not pretend that she's not good.
Right. Well, the main event, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn beating the Usos to become the Undisputed Tag Team Championships. All of this idea that, you know, Jey Uso's gonna, you know, have some hesitation, still has, you know, feelings for, you know, Sami Zayn is in that. So even some people out there, oh, Kevin Owens, he's going to turn, he swerve everybody.
I heard that too. He's going to turn. Yeah, I'm like, come on.
This was straight up story started, story closed. They had an epic brawl, and in the very end, when Sami Zayn hit three straight Huluva kicks, I'm telling you, man, my MVP of the entire Bloodline storyline, including Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and even Cody. Even Cody's been a small part of it in the overall scope of things. Jey Uso's my MVP. Not even Roman. I'm talking about just performance. Because Jey Uso, even when Sami Zayn is hitting him with the Huluva kicks, hits the first one, Jey is knocked loopy. Sammy hits the second one. Jey can't even stand on his feet. He's unconscious. Sammy hits the third one, and Jey is done. Everything about Jey, to me, I'm saying Roman has done better in the ring. Sammy is, I'm saying as far as just telling a story, cinema, as some people call it, to me, Jey Uso is the MVP. Everything this guy has done has been at a top-tier level. And there were times in this match, I started thinking to myself, what the fuck is this crowd going to do if the Usos retain? Because there were points in this match that, you know, it technically was a three count at least once or twice. And, you know, they're calling it 2 and 99 100s online. I'm like, nah, that was kind of a three count, but... What did you think of this match? I thought it did exactly what it needed to do.
I'm always surprised by the Usos' choice in ring attire, all white. I just thought that was interesting that they were the bad guys weren't all white. I thought it was a great match. I mean, they match up good, even in size and experience and wrestling ability. Those guys match up really well. I think Jimmy is the underrated one out of the four of them, obviously. Yeah. He gets overlooked a lot of times because Jay is so in the spotlight now. And, you know, Sammy is a little bit more popular than Owens. I would say even his reaction was a little bigger. Not that noticeable, but obviously, you know, all four guys can go. They match up really well. That's why I figured this feud has to continue. It shouldn't be one and done. I had a little hesitant. I was thinking, could the Usos retain? Maybe they will retain. But if they retain, then that would mean probably that Roman would lose the next night. No way the Bloodline can all retain.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that I thought that there was a possibility at one point. I'll say this much, DT. So many fucking kicks.
Yes.
So many super kicks to the face.
Oh, my God, yes.
Jesus, it had to be a couple of dozen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean...
What do you think about that? Do you get, like... Is that just today... This is just modern wrestling at this point?
Well, it's no longer a finisher.
Yeah.
It's really not. I mean, you know, like... See, it's a little different, like, when Cody hits Crossroads or even Sammy with a Luva kick. Sammy, in, you know, suspension of disbelief, could get a pin with one Luva kick. And Cody could get a pin with one Crossroads. The idea is that they're just putting... like a cherry on top of the sundae. You know what I mean? So it still could be a finisher, but with super kicks, it's no longer a finisher. There, so many people use super kicks now. I don't think people realize how many wrestlers use super kicks. I mean, some teams it stands out. The Usos it stands out. The Young Bucks it stands out. But now, you know, super kicks is like the new kick. You know, like you punch, you kick, you know, now it's like, all right, you know, you super kick, you know, it's a super
kick. It's to be expected. It reminds me when Randy Orton says, what time is leg slap class?
Yes.
I mean, there was a lot of kick. And Kevin Owens is doing it too. I mean, everyone's doing it. I don't even know if I just put it on the Usos and tag teams. Well, it seems like everybody's kicking people in the face.
You know what it is? It depends on who you're executing it to. Like when you see Kevin Owens, like super kick Jimmy. Like, Jimmy just, I can't do it, not on video, but he just, like, will stand there frozen and just jerk his head backwards.
Yeah.
And still be frozen standing up. Like, it's how you sell it, too. And it looks so fucking good. Like, it just looks so much more cinematic than just a regular kick. So now that's why a lot of people do the super kicks. But it really depends on who eats it too, because some people eat it beautifully, some people don't know what the fuck they're talking, what they're doing, you know. But
it's true. But notwithstanding all the kicks, I thought it was a good back and forth. Like Savage here, Liam is saying, do we think it was a little bit boring because it got good in the last 5 minutes? I was, everyone I think was so invested. There was a little bit of a lull here and there, but the crowd was so amped up all night. And again, it's a long night, so I don't think it was like it hit some kind of sort of like noticeable lull. Yeah, you got to pace it. But I think it delivered in the end, and obviously it delivered the result. Who didn't go home happy after night one? That's why, as we segue into night two, night one ended on a great note.
Yeah, and you know, it ended with the right match, because, you know, I've been saying it for weeks and weeks and weeks. There was no controversy here. You just close your eyes and you just envision going off the air at WrestleMania. You know, obviously we didn't expect the match that we got with Rhea and Charlotte. But when you close your eyes and you see WrestleMania going off the air, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn holding those belts up in the air, you know, you had grown people crying, you know, it just, the emotions were running wild. And, you know, you go off the air and then you're saying to yourself, wow, we still got another night of this. And we get the next night. And I tell you, man, I was so happy, even though it was only 5 minutes. And even though the outcome was very predictable, Brock Lesnar beating Omos, but Omos did good. Like, this match is not supposed to be a 10-minute match. It's supposed to be just two giants who lands, you know, the more powerful move for the finisher. I think, you know, in defeat, Omos looked fine. I enjoyed the match. The crowd was fucking into it.
They were. I mean, Lesnar, you know, Lesnar's a major star. He's top guy. I don't care if he lost four matches in a row to Roman Reigns. He's always a top guy. And, you know, we'll, after we finish this, we can talk a little bit about his heel turn, obviously, on Raw, because it plays into the future of all these things. But, yeah, I thought Lesnar, it was a good way to bring him out. I thought it was the typical, because Lesnar just wants to catch a flight home. like, you know, the usual narrative is, but clearly he stayed in town because he would make a very big impact the next night. So we were wrong about that one, that they put him on first because Lesnar just wants to go home. I doubt he went to from L.A. to Saskatchewan and back the next day. So I'm sure he stayed overnight in L.A. But, yeah, Omos, I knew we talked about it, DT, when we were doing predictions that he would do some street of feat of strength, yeah. Whether it was a suplex or an F5 or hold him up for some sort of gorilla
body
press.
Slamming like a toy.
Yeah, and he did him. And I thought it didn't look that awkward because some people like it looked a little weird F5ing him. No, I watched the match twice. I don't think it looked weird. Even the back suplexes looks like he got him with some impact. They look Omos didn't really look like he knew how to hit the mat with his arms hitting the mat back like you're supposed to take a back bump suplex. Yeah. Look, Omos didn't really. I don't know if Omos gets on his thrown around that much too much.
Right.
Like he learned how to take a bump.
He doesn't get tossed around ever.
Yeah, so, but the F5, no, I thought the F5 looked good. Everyone's like, I look weird. Well, the guy is 7'3" legit. I mean, it was as good as it could look. Brock Lesnar's only 6'3". Because, DT, aren't you 6'3"?
I'm almost 6'4", yeah.
You're almost 6'4". So, but don't you see Lesnar as a bigger guy than you just in... just a massive guy. He's a massive guy. I think it's the width and the shoulders and the waist. He's just...
Well, remember, I did that autograph signing with Video Game Central that time.
That's right.
You know, so I got this... I mean, he was smaller at that time. Well, actually, you know, I don't know how much smaller he actually is. I mean, he was kind of a beast at that time as well. But, you know, we're going back, what, almost 20 years. But
he looms larger, doesn't he, in real life? Yeah. Like,
he
just looms larger.
He was a specimen when you met him back then, and he's got to be even more now. Like, he just scares the shit out of you.
Yeah, he's a scary guy. And and again, we'll get more into that, how this plays into it, him with the Cody thing. But, I thought the match was fun. It did what it had to do. But I'll be honest with you, I thought maybe the next night they turn almost babyface and turn on MVP. But it didn't seem to go that way. But, it was a fun match. Was it as good as Cena, Austin Theory? Probably not, but it was all right.
Yeah, it was different types of matches. But to warm up the crowd, oh, man, that crowd was so energetic. And even though it was only 5 minutes, I got exactly what I expected to. And, again, people just shitting on this for weeks. Like, I admit it, I didn't want to see this match either. This is not a match I expected at Mania. But once it was announced and advertised, then you hear Undertaker singing the praise for Omos that he would even want to mentor.
Yeah, amazing.
That means a lot to me. Like, okay, you know, this guy actually puts a lot of work into this. So I kind of like root for somebody like that. And to see the match that we got, I was happy. And the next match, this might have been the weakest match of both nights, in my opinion.
Yes.
Outside
of
the Miz stuff with Snoop or Shane or even Pat McAfee. But Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler, over Liv and Raquel, over Natty and Shotzi, and over Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville. I don't think there was any argument here. I mean, if Chelsea Green was still teaming up with Carmella, Carmella had to take a little time off, I would have definitely figured Chelsea Green and Sonya. But Ronda and Shayna Baszler, a lot of people think they're going to be the ones to take the tag titles off of Becky and Bianca, Becky and Lita.
Yeah.
So, but this match was kind of like,
It was the real John in the chat room. He went to the event. He was posting some nice pictures before for us to see on here. He was saying he went to the bathroom during that match. There was a lull. There was not a lot of reaction. I mean, I was at home watching it here on the big screen. I had pretty cranked up, and it seemed very quiet. Matter of fact, I even checked my volume. Like, oh, the crowd is just quiet. I thought I muted my TV by accident. And I'm like, wow, the crowd is really not into it. Because let's be honest, Natty and Shotzi makeshift tag team just slopped together. Raquel is going to be a solo star. I think she's the next challenger for Rhea Ripley, by the way. And her and Liv just thrown together, slopped together. And DT, could there be two women who look less invested in being there than Ronda and Shayna?
Well, that's why
talk about it. It looks like they were forced to stay after school, and work on a project with kids they don't like.
No, you know
that's
like,
what that reminds me of.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry to piss off religious people, but that would have looked like me and my brother when we were kids and we were forced to go to church on Sunday.
No, that is true. I mean, the same thing. Believe me, up until I was 15, I was just forced to go to church by my father and mother on Sunday. But, yeah, they look like they don't want to be there. And I don't think it's a work quote unquote, with my fingers here. I just think Ronda is kind of done, and you saw her comments, and I'm not sure what's real and what's not. And I don't think Ronda's trying to stir up controversy for her character. I just think she's tired of the WWE, and I'm not sure if Shayna is long for this company either. They just seem very disinterested. Then they disappeared at one point, and Shayna came back in the ring with no boots on. What was that all about?
I don't know. I still haven't found out what the deal was with that. I thought that maybe, you know, like either something, you know, listen, I'm going to tell you a very, very quick story. It's pretty funny, but, you know, just quick, and I'm sure someone out there has experienced this also. You know those inserts you could put in, like, dress shoes that keep them stretched out? They're like plastic or wood, and you stick them inside shoes, and it keeps, like, the shoes from getting, like, wrinkles, the leather and stuff. It keeps it stretched. Like the inserts, you could buy them on Amazon. They're like plastic or wood, and you stick them inside dress shoes. It's like a long strip, and what it does is
it keeps it straight so the leather
doesn't start cracking up and everything. Shoe trees. Thank you, Tony. Shoe trees.
Shoe trees, right. Shoe trees.
I went to my wife's brother's 50-year-old birthday party about a month and a half ago. Long story short, I was looking for a good pair of dress shoes. I found a pair of dress shoes that had shoe trees in that were in there for a little while. I haven't worn these shoes in a while. So I wear the shoes. Everything is great. Go to the party. Had a great time. Come home 4 hours later. Took an Uber. So as we're walking from the sidewalk where we get out of Uber back into my house, my shoe feels funny. And my foot is cold. And I'm like, why is my foot so cold? And I look down, and there's a big chunk of rubber missing on the bottom of my shoe. And I'm like,
there's a hole? It was a hole?
No, they weren't old, so I don't know what happened. So I get in the house, I take the shoes off, and I swear to God, I was literally pulling pieces of the soles from underneath both of the shoes. Literally no effort at all, just pulling pieces off like nothing, like peeling a banana. And, I looked online that, you know, shoe trees or sometimes leather, if it stretches for too long or something happens, you can lose a sole or you could. I think with Shayna Baszler, it didn't look like she had an injury, especially after the match was over. Maybe something happened where part of the bottom of her insole or the rubber part maybe came off. Maybe they glued it. Maybe it came off.
That's true. That could happen. I mean, I actually was one time wore dress shoes. I was when I was a teenager, and they just fell apart. Like, but literally, like the bottom heel just came off the hinge, so to speak, and I had to go back. I was going to some sort of dance or something like that, and my shoe was fucked up on the bottom. Doesn't just happen to women, gentlemen. It happens to guys too.
Yeah, somebody is claiming that they saw Shayna Baszler limping after the match was off. So maybe she injured her ankle.
It's possible. Yeah, sure.
You know, I'm not sure, but you know, I'm laughing. I'm going to piss people off, and I don't really care. I'm looking at social media right now just to see if anything is breaking while we're doing this, and people are reporting. This is how they report it, Kev. Jay White is no longer WWE bound. Breaking news, and we've been saying this for a while, there was never any buzz that WWE was signing Jay White.
Yeah, we never heard
that. Yeah, it's just that the people that are desperately wanting Jay White in WWE assumed that he was going to WWE. It's just like, Mercedes, she's going to debut in AEW. Oh, no, you know, things are off. She's not going now. There was never any discussion of her going there. You know what I mean? Like, Jay White was never WWE bound. This was what people wanted, and they write it like that to make it seem like, oh, now they'll blame it on Vince. Oh, Vince is back in power. He doesn't want Jay White. I'm telling you, I could see it a mile away. But anyway, let's get back to Mania. So sure. Ronda Rousey, Shayna Baszler get the win. No title match associated with this. Maybe the impromptu number one contenders match on Raw. Maybe if Shayna Baszler does have a little bit of an ankle injury, maybe that's why they postponed it for a little while. So they have Liv and Raquel, you know, getting the match. Why not just have Liv and Raquel win the showcase match if they're going to get a title shot next week against Becky and Lita?
I don't know. Yeah, just strange. That match just had no heat. It was could have been a dark match. And the fact that guys like LA Knight, Bronson Reed, Karrion Kross, Bobby Lashley, they could have put these guys in a match in some way or shape or form over the women, and then you would have given the women a chance. Are we going to do business here, or are we just doing things to be politically correct? It just, that match had no steam, and I even saw a girl fan saying, "Ah, this is a boring match. There's nothing here." Well, there was nothing to it. There was nothing to cheer about in that match.
One thing that wasn't boring, and this might be my, well, I don't want to say favorite match of night two, because I think the main event was just a roller coaster ride with emotions and dopamine, yeah. But Gunther retaining the Intercontinental Championship, beating Sheamus and Drew McIntyre. These guys, you know, I don't remember who said it online, but this is the new, like, UFC. Like, this is UFC meets WWE. That it's physical, but it's still scripted at the same time. Right. These guys beat the living shit out of each other. And I watched Gunther's interview with Ariel Helwani yesterday. And, you know, the more I hear Gunther outside of the ring talking respectful, humble, classy, like, this guy, I think he's main eventing one of the nights of WrestleMania next year in Philly. This guy has it. We both thought Sheamus would win this because that's the one title that's
a lot of people called Sheamus. Yeah, we both called Sheamus.
Yeah, especially that Sheamus could have pinned Drew and Gunther would have never been pinned. Ooh. So he would have lost the title without being pinned, which would still give him some cred. But no, he wins. He retains. And I absolutely love this match. It arguably could have been my favorite match of night two if it wasn't for the main event.
Yeah, it was. They all match up well, and it's still, still seeing Gunther so skinny. I mean, he lost over 125 pounds. Him and Damian Priest, if you saw them 5 years ago, you wouldn't even think these two were the same guy. And both him and Priest, I think, were in a weight loss competition. Yeah. Gunther is just morphed into a completely different person than old school Walter. It's not even the same guy, DT.
No.
I mean, it's not even the same guy. FBI probably couldn't figure out that was the same guy without fingerprints. So he really committed to, you know, I think, I really believe, DT, do you believe that Triple H had a talk with him a few years ago and said, listen, you're a great wrestler. You got to lose the gut. You got to slim down. And I will push you to the moon. I believe in your talent, but cosmetically, you have to. We got to get you in a little bit better condition. I believe that, and I believe one day when Gunther does a shoot interview, he'll credit either Michaels or Triple H with getting him into fitness and stuff like that. Because for the longest time on the Independence, DT, he was a heavy guy.
Yes,
you know, and I don't think ever probably even thought about losing weight. He thought maybe that was even his gimmick to be a heavy set guy. But he is such a machine now. So yeah, his metamorphosis is totally impressive. And remember, DT, when everyone's shitting on Gunther, no one's ever going to call him that. That's a shitty name. He's Walter. Now no one even says that anymore. Everyone's all about his new name. You know, so freaking, WWE sometimes gets it right, DT. Sometimes WWE gets it right.
And, you know, he was talking about that with Ariel Helwani. He's like, look, he says his real name is Walter. He knew that sooner or later WWE is going to want to have their intellectual aspect. And he brings out a point, and I think we all agree with it. If his name would have been Gunther originally and they changed it to Walter, people would have been like, what the fuck are you changing it to Walter for? That's such a generic German name. Nobody names their kid Walter anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, so that's I never complained about the name. I always thought it sounded better. Like Walter, you know, it's like, you know, I never
liked the Walter name. I never liked, yeah. And I'm not really that big of a fan. Truth be told, I kind of said, because I never really understood what Imperium was. To me, it's almost like an offshoot Nazi organization without Vince being a Italian. Nazi. I'm not sure what Imperium, I'm still not sure what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the way they come out and like there's almost like the shock troops, like I don't really get what they're doing, but it seems to work. With him, I don't really connect him as a character, but I respect what he did to himself physically to become and reach his dream of being a WWE superstar. That I can totally respect. Like I said, the metamorphosis is impressive. It's almost inhuman. And he's good at what he does. I'll give him credit. To me, I really saw him as like a Drago, DT, like, you know, yeah. From Rocky. Yeah. Like, you know, I will crush you. That's all I saw. I mean, he's like wrestling's Drago. But he is more than that. I'll give him credit. His talent is there. I don't know, you know, people saying he should unseat Roman Reigns. Let's not get crazy. I don't know about that yet. You know, I don't think he'll, I think him and Cody will have a nice feud down the road. Yeah. I don't know if he's meant to meet Roman Reigns. I think that's more of a Cody thing, Captain America versus Mr. Imperium. But yeah, it was impressive. I'm not the biggest Drew McIntyre fan. Sheamus, okay, and I wanted to see Sheamus win that title to complete the circle of having all the titles. And I thought that that's what they were going to go for, DT, that to get Sheamus decorated and kind of give him a thank you for all he's done for this company. But I guess that wasn't their plan.
Yeah, well, you know what? Towards the end of the match, you know, because Drew McIntyre's had issues with his back lately. Plus, there's been some buzz that Drew McIntyre and WWE have not come to an agreement on a new contract. This contract is coming up soon. But when Gunther powerbombed Sheamus onto Drew McIntyre's back, and it almost looked like he got him in the neck. And then he picks up Drew McIntyre, gives him a powerbomb right after. So Drew gets the double whammy. Everything about this match was just incredible. The crowd went fucking apeshit for it. And just, listen, you look back on it, how many years? I mean, I still feel that Sheamus' greatest rival has been Drew McIntyre. I think when we look back at the annals of history, some people may say Randy Orton, but I think Drew McIntyre may be the one. But right now, for Gunther, I mean, banger after banger, pun intended, when it comes with Sheamus. This time it's in a three-way. But the funny thing is these guys, their chests look like Swiss cheese after. It looks like raw meat. But they seem like they enjoy it. You know, like each time they're just chopping each other. And, you know, at one point Sheamus hit the forearm to, I think it was Drew's chest. I think he did it like 25 times or something. Like, how does that, you know, like, and some people online get very, very nervous with some of these shots. And, you know, without, you know, I don't agree with it, but that football player recently, that which got one? Tackled in the chest, and he went into
the one, the Buffalo Bill guy,
So, you know, you think of that, and then people get a little nervous. They see these chops and these shots and these forearms are like, you know, that can't just be like raw meat, like meat hitting meat causing raw meat on it, you know. But they just they killed it. But you know, this is kind of like the UFC version of WWE. This full contact. You know, not simulating a punch or a kick. You're actually really fucking connecting and connecting hard.
So, yeah, I mean, this had a lot of hype on it. It met expectations. Like I said, I'm not really that big a fan of any of the three guys, but I could appreciate that they work well together, and they gave the fans what they wanted. I was surprised Gunther retained.
Yeah, me too. Gunther's high on my list. But the next match, which I honestly, and it's kind of amazing when you think about it, the amount of time that Gunther, Sheamus and Drew got was almost 17 minutes. This next match got almost the same exact amount of time. Bianca Belair retaining the Raw Women's Championship over Asuka. And I think Kairi Sane returns. I think the Kabuki Warriors reunite as a tag team. I know a lot of people are concerned about Asuka right now, but Asuka has had an amazing run in WWE. Right now, it is not Asuka's time to have this championship. And even though it was a fun 16-minute match, I couldn't get past in the back of my mind that Bianca's retaining. Like, I don't, like, and Asuka changing the face paint, you know, doing little shades of Kana, what she was in, you know, in Japan. But at the end of the day, you know, with the, you know, with the mist and dribbling the you know, the colored water and stuff, I felt like I was still looking at the same Asuka. And that's not a bad thing. It just at the end of the day, like, okay, maybe the appearance has changed a little bit, but to me, maybe because she's featured too much on Raw, and I think maybe Bianca Belair is featured too much on Raw, this felt more like an extended Raw match, in my opinion.
Yeah, it did. I mean, I picked Bianca to retain. I don't think Asuka is that top woman anymore. I mean, I don't think she's old or played out, but I think her time has kind of passed in WWE. She's still popular with the fans, but I think there's other people who can get that spot who are either up and coming, whether it's Roxanne Perez, even though she's very small, very young. I'm not sure who it will be, but Asuka to me is passe. I think she's a good attraction. I think she's a good attraction wrestler. But to give her the belt, nah, I wouldn't do it either if I was creative or if I was Triple H calling the shots on that one. I don't see the point. I think Bianca now completed a year. Bianca's a better ambassador for the company, you know, with the little kids and what she does did for the kids, and the entrance with the kids was really nice. Beautiful. We found out that that kid who was doing the contortionist thing, mother had died that morning. That was crazy. Yeah, Triple H, I believe, did get very emotional at that press conference. I don't think Triple H, because some people are like, oh, I don't know, it seemed like, I was like, people are so cynical. I think it was real emotional for Triple H. Yeah. And also, Triple H has kids, you know, he has daughters, he has three daughters. So it's like, and I think Bianca is just, you know, and I got this from the panel on the pre-show that I saw, where one of them said their friend referred to Bianca Belair as Jane Cena, like that she's going to be the female John Cena for the company. I could totally see that. I mean, she's got the look, she's got the personality, naturally strong athlete, not a controversial type of girl, doesn't have a controversial background, married. She's the perfect role model, DT, for the women's division. She's boring. People, Kev, she's boring. I was like, who's not? Is everyone's boring to everybody? Everyone wants to be it today. DT, my God, how would they have made it back in the Bruno Ivan Koloff days?
Everything's got to be epic, amazing, unbelievable. The hair is raising on my arms. Everything's got to be 4-star match or above. Everything's got to be a main event caliber. Everybody's got to get an opportunity. You know, everybody.
She's boring, Kev. She doesn't look boring to me. I don't think half these guys who call boring can handle a woman like that. Boring. A librarian. You know, a librarian look is boring to me. Bianca Belair is not boring. She's very charismatic. Yes. So we all have clearly a different definition of two things, DT, boring and buried. Well, right? Two words that we all seem to have a different definition of what boring and buried is.
This is why people got to be very careful about insisting that every match is epic, amazing, this is awesome. Because what happens is that when everybody does it, then you get numb to it, and then a match which would be considered very, very good comes off as boring because we need to. I'm looking at more stupid news with Vince McMahon returning. A lot of cuts are coming. No, stupid. The cuts are coming because Endeavor and WWE are merging together, and they don't need two same people working in the fucking office.
Exactly,
idiots. Fucking, I'm turning off the social media. I'm getting.
I know. If I don't have to be on there for, I mean, I don't really need to be on Twitter. I do need to be on Facebook, and Facebook is a little bit different. It's really Twitter and Instagram with wrestling that is insane, and not so much on Facebook unless you go to those stupid group pages, which I totally ungrouped myself from everybody. Yeah. I don't belong to any wrestling group page at all anymore, except my friend Phil Rhea from Turnbuckle Throwbacks. You know Phil.
Yeah,
he's the only one because Phil's not controversial and he's just a fan. But other than that, I left every wrestling group on Facebook.
Toxic.
It's worse than Twitter.
It's worse than Twitter. Yeah,
it is worse.
Yeah. But, you know, Bianca, you know, like I said, people got to, you know, be careful about everything being this is awesome, this is awesome, because when everything is awesome, nothing is awesome. I know a lot of people don't understand that, but, you know, when you start seeing, like, every match involving blood and hardcore, you know, it's like, you know, you go to a horror movie and you're not even freaked out or anything anymore, and you don't jump off your seat and you kind of feel a little bit bored, like, oh, this movie, you're scared, you having nightmares. This was nothing. That's because people get numb to it.
Desensitized. And
this match was excellent. For me, my problem was I couldn't get past the fact that not only did we know Bianca was retaining, but it felt like a feud that we knew the outcome, and the execution on Raw was weird. It was weird. Like, you know, like Bianca being a little bit too freaked out because Asuka is a little bit of, you know, goo coming out of her mouth. She's been doing that for how many years? Like, she's all freaked out by it. You know, she wasn't as freaked out when Alexa Bliss fucking bashed her over the head with a vase in some psychologist's office or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the EST, you know? And that's another thing, even with Raw, you know, it's not her fault. But if you think about Bianca's character, and this to me sums it up, when she's in the ring with Rhea on Raw, and Rhea is in her face, and Bianca's like, you know, Rhea, one day, and I'm like, if that was the Bianca Belair, you say, well, why don't we do it right here, right now? And then Rhea Ripley, you know, backs off, but they did not want Rhea to back off. They wanted Rhea to be the aggressor here, and that hurts Bianca Belair's character a little bit.
True, you're right.
But she gets the win. She retains over Asuka. You know, now, you know, we'll see where they go with Asuka. And I hope they could work out something and bring back Kairi Sane. I think her and the Kabuki Warriors would help this women's tag team division tremendously.
So. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, like I said, decent match, and Bianca was the right move, you know, to make. There'll be other challenges for her down the road.
We got three more matches, and we're out of here. The next one, well, actually, technically four. So the Miz goes out there. The Miz, you know, he's a little pissed off what happened the night before. Pat McAfee, I wasn't prepared. This isn't that. Snoop Dogg, for some reason, is suddenly pissed off at The Miz, and Shane McMahon's music hits. I loved it because I'm a huge Shane McMahon fan. It was nice to see him back. You know, he comes out there and he's blown up and he's sweating like a pig.
He was trying to talk. I want to thank everybody for coming out. That meant so much to me.
It doesn't even sound like him anymore. Jesus.
Shane's in shape, out of shape, man, I call him.
It doesn't sound like Shane anymore, but he goes on the mic. He's like, L.A., you know, thank you for that response. I love it. I appreciate it. I love you guys. And then we get an impromptu match with The Miz. And then for some reason, Shane starts running the ropes and dropping down. And I'm like, this isn't championship wrestling from 1985. Like, just do your punches, you know.
When Shane got him in the corner and he was punching him, it looked like he was poke tickling Miz.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like just when you're poking a baby? That's what it looked like with those shots. Look like a baby pokes to the stomach. I'm like, oh, this
is
so
just bad. Punch him a couple of times, Miz. Oh, drops to the corner, and if Shane can do it, do coast to coast, and that's the end of it. But no, he runs the ropes and drops down, and it looks like he blew his knee out.
Darn the leapfrog, yeah.
Yeah, and Miz they have the camera focused on Miz, and, you know, we're having, you know, flashbacks of when Vince did the power walk down to the ring and blew both his quads out. And, yeah, so Shane McMahon, listen, I give him credit that he didn't want to go out on a stretcher. You know, he obviously had to get help to the back, and it looks like he blew out his knee. But I give Jessica Carr, the referee, all the credit in the world, because a few people brought this to my attention.
Impromptu.
Yeah, if you look closely, under her breath, she actually says to Snoop Dogg, can you do the people's elbow? And Snoop Dogg's like, yeah. Well, I can't impersonate.
Here's the clip, Tony's posted it.
Huh?
Look at the clip. Tony torn just quad? Posted the clip. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Torn quad.
Jesus Christ. So, yeah. I think is it his knee or is his quad that he tore? Like Vince?
Well, no. I mean, no. I didn't hear anything. You know, maybe he did tear his quad, but that I don't. I think that would actually be more out there. Like, there would be more satire of Vince and Shane, like father, like son, tearing quad. So. I don't know. I mean, look, the bottom line is he blew his leg out. So he's done. And the sad thing about it is, I don't know if Shane McMahon ever returns to the ring again.
No, I doubt it.
You know, this might be 53 it.
53 years old. 53.
Yeah. So Jessica Carr whispers under her breath, could you do the people's elbow? And Snoop Dogg's like, you know, yeah. However he says it, he's like, yeah, I could do it. And Miz, you know, the referee, like, you look, she actually tells Miz what to expect. And Snoop hits him with the people's elbow and pins him. So yeah. Snoop Dogg, and look, I don't want to compare Snoop Dogg and AEW to here, but I think Snoop Dogg actually did a lot better over here compared to the AEW.
He did. He came real close to knocking Miz's teeth out on that second punch. Holy shit.
Did you ever think that Snoop would have a punch like that?
No, I didn't think so. And again, it looked very aggressive, too. I was like, whoa, Miz better ball back quick or he's going to lose his teeth.
Yeah.
Jesus, that was a legit straight punch to the mouth. I was like, wow, that could have been bad for the Miz. Yeah, props to everyone who did what they did to improvise. They're all professionals in there, you know. Jessica Carr's been around a while now.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, good on Miz, too, for doing anything to get the crowd to laugh, or you know, he'll be the cannon fodder for anybody. You see, that guy's so content with his life. Miz will do anything the company has something to do. Tonight, you can't really hate on that. You know, can't really hate on that too much.
And tonight will be on Wheel of Fortune, and tomorrow will be on Entertainment Tonight, and the day after it'll be on Family Feud, and the day after that it'll be on some cooking show.
He's a happy-go-lucky guy. He's not a curmudgeon. You know, he's not an old complainer. He never goes to social media to say anything. You wouldn't know if that guy was dying inside. He's happy all the time, and
he's stoned all the time.
You know, and he says, you know, he's got his hot wife, he's got his beautiful family. I mean, I think the Miz is a very content person, and when you're content, you don't tend to complain too much.
Exactly. Well, the next to last match of the night, we had Edge beating Finn Balor, Hell in a Cell. Yesterday I showed a picture of Finn Balor's injury, which was grotesque. Long story short, there was a ladder spot where Edge threw the ladder into Finn Balor, and the edge of the metal caught Finn Balor in the head and actually sliced the top of his head open.
Yeah, that was because the makeup, you couldn't tell that much, but it was a bad cut from what I heard.
And what they did was they put the camera focused on Edge, and I thought it was funny with Edge. I brought this up yesterday. The Edge, he goes into the ring. He's looking for a table. He's looking for a chair. He finds a toolbox. He takes out a wrench or a screwdriver, and I'm thinking, oh, he's going to do what he did like with Jeff Hardy that time. I think Randy Orton did to Jeff Hardy, like maybe like twist something and maybe Balor's nose. After all of that, Edge, you know, because we find out later that while Edge is doing all this and we're watching Edge, what the doctors were doing was they actually took a needle and injected lidocaine on the top of his head to numb that area, and then they stapled his head. They stapled his head a bunch of times with temporary sutures, and to try to not only stop the bleeding but to put the wound together a little bit. Like,
of course,
so once they were all done, after all of Edge's searching for weapons, Edge goes back in the ring with nothing. He's like, okay, I'm done. So he goes back in the ring. But Finn Balor, it was all adrenaline after that. That guy, I mean, when he jumped onto the cage and started crawling almost like a spider, I mean, this guy, and he's not a spring chicken anymore either, even though he keeps himself in unbelievable shape. You know, it sucks that the Demon loses again, but no shame whatsoever in this loss. And this was spectacular. Edge's intro was excellent. Loved the mask that he was wearing. Had a little bit of a Brood influence to it. Did not get any Christian Cage, which I'm a little disappointed.
Me too. I was a little disappointed in that.
You know, I in hindsight, it probably wasn't needed. But, you know, this Hell in a Cell, you know, it's a shame that Balor got injured. You know, they still put on a great performance, but, you know, you could see that because of it, there was some spots that they obviously could not do. But everything about it, you know, Edge's intro, you know, with the mask and coming out with the Slayer music, a little bit of influence to
the group. That was great, That was great.
Then he comes out to his regular theme, Balor going full-blown old school, no Judgment Day music, doing the old Balor. And even in the beginning, when he's doing what he does with the fans, when he puts his arms out and the lights go on and everybody, you know, mimics him, everything was 100% vintage Demon Balor.
And it was a nice visual when they showed the far shot of the crowd and everyone doing the extension of the hands. And listen, he's been here long enough that even some of the newer fans know that gimmick, that when the music hits and do that thing. So I was wondering, he's a bad guy, and he's, you know, Edge is really the favorite here. Are they going to do his stretch out with the arms? And it looked like the whole crowd did it, so it was pretty cool. Yeah.
And think about this. I mean, obviously, you know, when it's done the right way, you know, we don't have to worry about injury, but, you know, just the visual that Finn Balor took a concerto to the head with his head split open like a fucking... You know, I'm not putting a picture over here, and I don't want anybody to post that picture either, but that was just ugly. I mean, that gash had to have been about 6 inches.
Yeah,
that's
they had to do what they had to do. I mean, I wasn't, you know, people were like, oh, if it was AEW, they wouldn't have. I was like, but it's WWE, and it's not even just about the blood, it's about the cut itself. Yeah. And You know, that match was okay. It was what it was. I wasn't so, you know, everyone's like, oh, I've seen much better Hell in a Cell than that. Yeah, we have. But, you know, it was all right. The injury took it from where it probably needed to go or was going to go, and it altered plans. And what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, that leaves us with the main event. And I know we opened up this recap and review talking about this match.
Full circle.
So, you know, just to add a little bit to it, you know, the match went 35 minutes. You know, Roman Reigns obviously retains the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. Cody Rhodes loses. Loved the moment in the beginning where Cody Rhodes gave his belt to negative one Brody Lee's son.
Yeah, that was something. Was something. And Amanda Huber was right there. I didn't know if she was there. I saw her
she wasn't there, but someone else. I didn't see her there. I could have sworn.
They said she was there. Unless I thought I saw her right behind the kid, like right in the back. There was a woman there that looked like her. I mean, then who would be that? I mean, he's a young kid. Who would be chaperoning him?
Well, maybe it was an aunt or something. I didn't see
her. Maybe it was a sister. Yeah.
It could have been, but. You know, their relationship, Amanda Huber and her son and Cody, is very, 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 very strong. And, there's a lot to unpack over there. If you go to her social media, even WrestleMania weekend, she gives you a little insight behind it. But Cody gives negative one the title, the weight belt. And it was beautiful. The belt was really, really nice. And inside, it was inscripted with every company that Cody Rhodes has ever worked for.
Yeah.
And, you know, we did see Brandy and, you know, their kid a few times, you know, when they first showed up at the arena and then they were sitting at ringside. You know, this match, I mean, you couldn't have... I mean, obviously, the Solo Sikoa involvement was going to happen. Right. No one came out to offset Solo Sikoa. No. We had the referee eject him early on, you know, which was more, you know, visual than anything else. But Solo Sikoa would later on show up once again under a hoodie, still hits Cody with the Samoan spike, you know, which ended up being the specific cause of the match ending. But the Usos would show up later on with a referee bump, and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, they negated them and started brawling up the rampway and into the crowd. But, you know, in the end, you know, it's the response online is fascinating. Because, like as we said earlier, you know, we don't need to repeat what we said earlier about the history with the Horsemen and Dusty and the legacy and chasing the title and, you know, teasing it for a little while is what blew up Dusty even bigger as a babyface, and, you know, and why his title win meant even more when it happened. But I was very surprised. In hindsight, you know, it was a weird thing, Kev. Yeah. Back in the summer of last year, the Usos were going to face the Street Profits at SummerSlam. And I don't know if anybody really wants to take a moment and think back to the build for their match at SummerSlam. They had had a match prior to SummerSlam that was arguably top three tag team matches of the year. They put on a performance, and the Street Profits lost kind of with controversy. And their build going into SummerSlam, everything about it, it felt like Street Profits are taking this. Profits have, they can't lose this. And they did. And I was left that night saying, I don't fucking get it. You can't build this any better. Drew McIntyre, Clash at the Castle. You know, everybody and their mother, you know, the build for Drew in his hometown, vignettes with his family, this, this, and that. Like everything, it just felt like he can't lose. And they both lost. And they did it again with Cody Rhodes. But the two things is, number one, in hindsight, I am glad the Street Profits didn't win, because the Usos carrying it all the way to WrestleMania made it feel even more powerful when Owens and Zayn dethroned them. But with even Drew McIntyre, in hindsight, I'm glad he didn't win at Clash at the Castle. Because what would we have looked at as a WrestleMania match? Like, what would have been the build? Drew McIntyre facing Cody? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, something just feels, even though I absolutely love Drew, definitely main eventer, you know, definitely earned his keep, but keeping it on Roman Reigns in hindsight was the right move. And it's interesting that the way I felt Sunday before I had that brainstorm, I felt the same way I did about the Street Profits in SummerSlam, Drew McIntyre, Clash at the Castle. Yeah. Why were you so convinced Roman Reigns was retaining?
I thought the 1,000 Days played into it. I thought that Cody was getting it too easy. I just thought that, again, use the word adversity, obstacles. I was thinking about the Dusty. Again, I'm always in an old school state of mind. You know me, DT. I was a big territory fan. And I was just kind of just thinking outside the box. And it'd been a while. And I even knew, even going when I'm doing stuff that I do at Wrestling Soup, even, you know, on the private server for our Patreons and stuff, you know, we say whatever's on our mind. It's not restricted there. We can be more footloose and fancy free with our words and joke around and bullshit. So we can't really say in the mainstream because people take it wrong and whatever. We know each other really well. So I even said to myself, I'm going to put this out there and I know I'm going to get hit for it. You know, the Reigns is going to retain. Everyone's going to jump all over me. And so when I did it weeks ago, when I first said it, we're wrestling. So everyone was like, that's an interesting take, Kevin. It's not likely. I'll just say this. That's an interesting take, though. Like, fans were saying that to me. No, dude, that's not a bad way, but I really highly doubt. This is Cody's time. That's what everybody said to me, DT. This is Cody's time. Like, Kev, you got to admit, it's time. It's time for Reigns to lose the belt. And I highly recommend all you guys watch Paul Heyman's interview with Ariel Helwani, and he'll tell you what is time and how this works. You know, you'll enjoy Paul Heyman's sarcasm for the wrestling fans who think they know more than he does. And everyone has an opinion. Paul Heyman puts it very well. But yeah, I thought I was going to, oh my God, you know, I got to put myself out there with more Roman Reigns abuse than I got years ago. But Reigns is in a different zone now. This is not the Reigns of 5-6 years ago. This is a different guy. So, but I thought, you know, people are going to, and people, some people jumped on me. What do you got, insider information? No one thinks that. And then people started to say it. JD from New York got on it. He said, you know, I think Reigns, I think, is going to retain. And he started saying it. And the other people started saying it. My brother started saying it. I'm not saying they copied me, but they started to have a different frame of mind thinking about it as it got closer and closer. More people, and people you guys in the chat probably know, other people you follow were starting to say it. But I'm like, yeah, and it's like no big deal to me. Like, you know, people were tagging me. Castle said it first. I was like, it doesn't matter. I just took a guesstimation, DT, as an old school fan. I have no inside information. I didn't call up Cross. I don't know anything. I just took a guess. And I just said, I think it could go this way. I think the 1,000 days, I think. And it's nothing against Pedro Morales or a racial thing. I just think that they can't, it doesn't sit well with Vince, Triple H, any of the powers that be, that Roman is so close to the top four. Pedro's in the way. He's got to, and how many days before he beats Pedro? Another month and a half. Yeah, we got to let him go with this and we'll extend the feud. I'm just putting myself as a fly on the wall in the boardroom, thinking how they're going. I don't know, the 1,000 days, we really want to get Reigns in that. To that level of top guys where he's in the discussion, because I think they want to come up against Anthony for all the criticism, and Lord knows I took the heat too when I was back in Reigns all those years, for justifying Roman Reigns' stardom and pushing him all those years. Now, Cody said in that promo, took a little dig, hey, all right, you're 11 years here, and it took, you know, 8 years to get you here. The last 3 years, you have been the man. But what about all those years before it? You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To justify it. To say, all right, yeah, you want to go back and clown on Reigns where he was at with the sucker and succotash and the bullshit babyface gimmick that didn't work? That's in the rearview mirror, guys. He's making the 1,000 days. He's in the conversation now of Hulk Hogan, Bruno Sammartino, Bob Backlund. Anthony, 5 years ago, would you ever have imagined Roman Reigns would be in the conversation?
No.
They wanted to get him there. They wanted to get him to that level, and the 1,000 days is a way to do it. And Cody's going to be here for a while. He didn't sign a 1-year contract. I said it before. Why does he have to win it right now? Cody is 36, 37 years old. He's got a long stretch. I think he'll finish his career here, quite honestly. And then Cody will probably be an executive in the back once he retires. he's got, this doesn't have to be now. It could be at SummerSlam. It could be at Survivor Series. There's a big four pay-per-view, but WrestleMania was the epitome. Oh, stop it. SummerSlam had just as many big matches. Survivor Series is a big deal too, and the Royal Rumble's another big deal. Why does it have to be at WrestleMania? Going on and on here, but the bottom line is, to close it out, I just thought outside the box, and I started to piece it together. And again, you know, listen, I get it wrong sometimes. I get it right sometimes. I got it right this time.
Yeah. And, you know, I will repeat one thing I've said before. You know, yes, wrestling is supposed to break your heart. Sometimes you wait too long. And I think a lot of people feel that the way they pushed the story with Cody Rhodes, there should have only been one outcome. You know, there's only been one outcome. And, you know, in hindsight, though, the way we look back, and listen, it's not about Vince in creative or Triple H in creative. You know, I look at decisions that were made before Triple H took the reins, after Triple H took the reins. And what I think we can all honestly say is that leading into WrestleMania, everything that WWE has done with Cody Rhodes, everything that WWE has done with the Bloodline, everything that WWE has done with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn over the last, if you don't want to say 12 months, we could say the last 9 months. I don't think anybody would really argue with any of it. Like, they really have not made any unforced errors. So when you realize leading into Mania that everything has clicked on all cylinders, you know, the Cody Rhodes not winning is a shock. It's a surprise. Same like when Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker and ended his streak. It was a shock. It was a surprise. Right. Sometimes you look at it at the very moment and you're like, it doesn't make sense. There's no excuse for it. There's no logical reason behind it. You know, in hindsight later on, you know, if it ends up, who knows? Yeah, listen, you got to be very careful who you follow out there as far as news. And the reason why I say that, I'm not talking about anybody individually, but what you got to understand, everybody, is that there's a lot of people who base their news on emotion. So people don't like Vince. When something is crappy, they'll blame Vince. If people don't want an outcome to be a certain way, they will dictate that, oh, this happened because of this, or this happened because of that. And what you got to be very careful of going forward is that if they feel that someone else should have been in position with it, they could turn around and report it as news that WWE is having second thoughts about putting it on Cody Rhodes, or WWE now with Vince McMahon back, Vince McMahon has pulled the reins and Vince McMahon wants Brock Lesnar to, you know, like, you don't know. You got to be very careful because people will add their emotional spin behind it.
They do. You're right.
So, you know, right now, I look at it like the Bloodline storyline, Cody Rhodes, Sami Zayn, Solo Sikoa, The Usos, Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman, Kevin Owens, everything about what they've done the last 9 months has been near perfect. If anything, it's gone over and beyond what anybody would have expected. Going into night two, The Usos losing to Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, going into night two, everything and beyond has been well above our expectations. I'm going to give WWE the benefit of the doubt that since they've clicked on all cylinders up until this moment, that there is something, a bigger picture here, not just a Vince returning, a change in plans, a change in views, a change in feeling, you know, Endeavor wants this or anything like that. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt based on my hunch, my brainstorm, whatever, is that they want Cody, in tribute to his dad, in tribute to the Horsemen, in tribute to Ric Flair, in tribute to everything else.
In tribute to tradition.
In tribute to tradition. Uh-huh. That Cody chasing the title a little bit further, facing adversity, facing the beast, being forced to step aside from the title picture right now because he's got a fucking monster, a beast coming after him, that in the end, this is going to get the fans to want Cody to win it even more. And that's why I'm not going to crap on it. Looking back, I would have rather have Cody win. I would have loved to say, yeah, you know, finish the story. You know, it was right, this and that. But if the bigger picture is anything of what we just talked about, then I'm fine with it even more. Because yeah. You and I understand the history. We know the history. We know what it's being inspired from. And that's a good thing. Yes, you can take from history. There's nothing wrong with Jesus Christ. You look at the movie world. You look at the music world. You look at the entertainment world. They're always remaking this, refurbishing this, rehyping this, redoing this. You know, it's always happens. And in pro wrestling, if something was really good and you could add a 2023 spin on it, why not?
Yeah, it's a great way to close it out. I agree. And I'm looking forward to Backlash. I'm looking forward to Cody versus Brock, the tag team match, whatever other matches get announced as. And it should be an interesting SmackDown on Friday. I think that's going to tell that show's going to tell the tale of a lot of things. I'm hearing that, you know, supposedly Vince is more kind of invested in booking Raw, and Triple H is going to be not relegated, but SmackDown's going to be more his thing. So let's see how the show, if we see any differences or what comes out of SmackDown. I think Friday night's a very telltale type of show.
Yeah, we'll see if we get any surprises. I mean, on NXT tonight, you know, as I talked about over the weekend, I said just because, you know, Bron Breakker is main roster bound doesn't mean that he can't stay in NXT a little bit longer. And tonight he showed up and he attacked Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams in role reversal. Bron Breakker, full-blown heel now on NXT.
Full-blown heel. Probably needed to happen. And, you know, some people are saying, well, you know, maybe what happened with his dad. I don't think that had anything to do with it personally, but... I think Bron Breakker had to turn heel, no matter whether his father had some sort of brouhaha at WrestleCon. I don't think, I want to separate the kid from that. Bron needed to turn heel. And, you know, it's, listen, Steiners were great heels too for half their career. So, let's see how he makes it as a heel. Maybe that's his call. He's a real life nice kid, from what I hear. He's a really nice guy. Crow said a lot of nice things about him. Yeah. But so I don't, you know, I don't think he's this kind of prick behind the scenes. I think that they're maybe testing him too to see if he can be a great heel like his uncle was and his dad was. Obviously, Scott was a better heel as a solo act. Let's see what he's got as a heel. Maybe you know that's his calling to be a great heel. You know,
look what happened to Dominic Mysterio. Who would have ever thought?
There you go. Roman Reigns, we were just talking about it. The Roman Reigns 5 years ago.
Oh, my God,
kissing babies and stuff. People calling for his release. I mean, imagine he got released. You know what? Again, don't give up on people. And that's why, you know, people say to me, oh, you're frustrated for your friend Cross. A little bit. But I think, again, it's one idea away. It's one promo away. It's one creative idea that gets pushed away. So, no, I have faith for Bronson Reed, for Cross, for guys that people are a little worried about right now with the change of the guard. You know, let's see what happens. You know, again, I know people don't like to hear that, but that's what you got to do. Yeah, like you said, D.D., Dominic Mysterio, a year ago this time, they could have released that kid. No one would have said boo.
All right, got to put you on the spot. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you rate WrestleMania 39? We don't have to – we just do it as a whole. We don't have to do separate nights. What do you rate it on 1 to 10? What was your favorite match of WrestleMania and your least favorite match?
Out of both nights, so put them all together.
If you want to do it that way, you can. Yeah, we can.
Okay. Well, night one, my favorite match, the tag team match, and the close second, Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair, neck and neck. Those two matches. Worst match of night one. Worst match of night one. That's a tough one. What would be the worst match of night one? I don't know if I can. I not have a worst match of night one?
Yeah, you don't have to. Or the match you liked the least.
Match I liked the least. Well, the match I thought that was the stinker of both nights altogether was the women's match. Shotzi and Natty and the tag team thing. Okay, yeah. And the second match of the night, people were already looking for concession stands. So that would be the stinker of the night. I liked, obviously, not a big fan of those guys, but the three-way dance for the Intercontinental title was great. Yeah. But I loved Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes match. And I even liked the finish, man. It was exciting, all the false pins and just, you know, that much close. And at one point I said, well, there goes Cody's going to win. It was exciting. I loved the match. I was on the edge of my seat for that match. And overall, I would give, like, I had given night two like a C+, but if I put both shows together, all together, put them both together, I'm going to give it a solid B.
Okay. All right. For me, night one, my favorite match, I'm going to go with Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair with the tag team title match, close second. My least favorite match of the night, gonna be honest with you, probably Damage Control against Becky, Lita, and Trish.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, it was a good match, but, you know, to me, it's like I'm kind of tired of Becky Lynch with Damage Control. I think I'm just kind of tired of the whole thing because.
And they're not over. They're really not over.
It just kind of fell flat a little bit. We don't count the Miz matches, by the way, everyone. Otherwise, that's the easy way out. For night two, my favorite match of the night by far, Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes. I would put Gunther, Sheamus, and Drew McIntyre second if I had to. Least favorite match of the night, believe it or not, I got to go with the women's tag team match also. If it would have gone a little longer and if it would have had a couple of more memorable spots, I would have actually chosen Bianca versus Asuka. Because to me, it just felt like a Raw match more than anything else.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
On a scale, I give night two, I give it a B-, because, you know, a couple of matches I think were a little bit disappointing. Night one, I would give an A-. I would give night two a solid B, and night one, I would give an A-. If I had to do a scale of 1 to 10.
So probably B+ altogether, right?
Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it probably an 8. Because I think years from now, the matches we're going to remember is going to be Rey and Dom, Rhea and Charlotte, the men's tag team title match. We're going to remember Gunther, Sheamus, and Drew. We're going to remember Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. And some will remember Edge and Finn Balor. It's a lot of matches to remember coming out of this Mania.
Yeah, that's good. But overall, like I said, fun WrestleMania. Unfortunate, more about the people who are complaining days to come. But Friday night, again, you know, the next couple of days, I'm going to even try to, you know, dumb down my social media, even my tweeting. Wait for Friday, see how SmackDown
goes. Well, I'm
going
on vacation.
Oh, you're going on vacation?
Yeah, I'm going on vacation from Thursday until Monday evening. So I will be visiting friends and doing a few things and...
You going out of town or you're going...
Going to Connecticut.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, so I'll get a few days away just to try to relax a little bit. I will be staying away from the social media for sure. But, Kev, pleasure as always. You know,
thanks,
I know.
Man. No, this was fun, man. This was Chapter 3. This was a good one, too. Yeah. I mean, all of them have been great, but this was, a lot of fun. And it's like old times. We'll definitely do this again. Everybody wants to know. That's just, you never know what me and DT are going to do.
We'll be like
WWE creative. You don't know which way we're going to go.
Hey, we got Backlash coming up soon. So maybe
we'll do Backlash. Yeah, like I said, we'll do this again. Like I said, we don't want to give away all the secrets.
No. We'll let everybody know. We'll give everybody a heads up when we're going to plan it. So.
Yeah, DT, have a great vacation. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I know this is going to go to the general populace tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to go to the general populace, and I'm going to stick around for a few more minutes just to answer a couple of questions just for Patreon. But, yeah, this will be on – it will not be on YouTube, but it will be online.
Sounds good, man. I'll spread the word on it once you got it posted. Everybody have a good time, have a good week. DT, have a great vacation.
All right, you too. Have a good one. Be well. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this WrestleMania 39 recap. And we also talked a little bit about the Raw after Mania leading into Backlash, where things go from here. You know, a little bit of tidbits with Vince and everything else. You know, we didn't want it just to be just a WrestleMania recap, but I hope you enjoyed it. And it's fun, you know, doing these with Kev again. And we will definitely do another one again soon. When that'll be and why it will be to be determined. So I will definitely let everybody know, but it'll happen sooner than you realize. So for my Patreon family, stand by because you got a little bit of some bonus time coming. But for everyone else, you know, just keep supporting what I do over here. Keep supporting Kev Castle. You can get him on Twitter at Kev Z Castle. You can get me on Twitter at Don Tony D. And everyone, be well. Much love. And send your feedback. Always welcomed. Always appreciated. Have a good one, everyone.
cool. Yeah.